Chicago Sports, spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hoge, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. Happy Sunday. Beat indeed is on. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Jared Payton. He's Adam Hoge with you till 6. Dan Long producing. Cubs are going to the World Series.
Slow down, man.
Just like that?
Why not? Let's just get...
I mean, Kyle Schwarber hits one home run and everybody's fine now.
Well, I don't know what you were thinking about yesterday afternoon, but I had the day off not to get my bursa sac drained, which you should be happy to hear. Adam Hoge is going on Tuesday. Professionally going to be done. I'm going to be sliced. I'm going to be diced. I'm going to be drained. I'm going to be
banded. Last week you said you would die if you got it drained.
Well, that's what I thought, but then I talked to a doctor, and he said you better get that drained, and he's a doctor, and I'm not.
Another question.
Yeah.
How long are you going to be out of activities?
Not out at all.
Oh.
Ready to roll.
That's good, then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, a very rough day for me yesterday on the tennis court. I know you guys are very concerned. It was the opener of the Shoreline League Saturday mornings. Karn playing the one seed. That's me. A 6-2, 6-0 loser.
Dang.
Wait, you were the one seed?
I was playing number one court, which is so you play against the other best player, and the other best player beat me into the ground, and I went into my car and started weeping afterwards. But you know that's why there's always next week, baby.
Maybe the surgery is needed for you to get your game back.
Yeah,
he was saying, hey, were you after the match? Like, were you out last night? I'm like, nah, I was. I went home at 10 o'clock. But if you must know, like, I have a little bit of a wrist issue going on. I got the elbow, but I also have this wrist deal going on. So if you want me to give you excuses, I will. But when I lose that badly, there is no excuse. It was really embarrassing.
And I feel like the only tennis stories you tell us are ones in which you're not even really competitive.
Yeah, well,
I don't think
do you
so.
Just, are you just humble and you don't tell us the ones where you dominate, or do you just never win?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up, Adam. It's a good place to start the show. The Rainbow Tennis Tournament, which is on the South Side coming up in July, I did win that in 2014 and did not return in 2015 and 2016. But I have reached out to the Rainbow folks and will be defending my 2014 title in 2017. So does that count?
Sure, I'll give it to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I got you. Have you seen? You've seen the trophy,
JP? I've seen the trophy. Yeah. We had it in the studio upstairs for couple months.
I carried that thing around. That was back in the game days. I had that thing like
about 10 months, right?
That thing was attached to me. Can we just play real quick here as we start the show? Can we play the moment that we're talking about, Dan? You got me. You got love for me. Here we go. Yesterday. Oh, it was so good.
Schwarber in the air, deep left center, back toward the wall. It's a grand slam. Whoa.
Listen to the madness.
Now, I was in Hobart, Indiana, going to a wedding. Congratulations to Mike Dice.
Congratulations.
The Dicer, they rolled the dice. They got it done yesterday. So they had the wedding at 1:30. The reception's at 5:30. We're in Hobart, Indiana. What do you do for 4 hours, maybe 3 hours in Hobart? Well, you go to the bar and you
drink.
You hang out and you watch Schwarber hit grannies and create large noise. You know, they don't... Hoge, you would freak out. They allow smoking.
No.
Oh,
in
no.
The establishment.
No, you can't.
What is this? 10 years ago?
It was unbelievable, right?
Do you guys remember those days though, when you used to go out and you'd come home and everything just smelled like smoke?
It was
so they changed the laws in Madison halfway through my college career. So like the first 2 years, when I don't think I was legally able to be in a bar, you were able to smoke in the bars, and then it changed, and it was the greatest thing ever. I mean, for a law that has there ever been a law that has changed, had so much fuss over it, but once it was actually changed, everyone was like, yeah, actually, that was kind of a good idea.
Well, it hurts the businesses, though. The business loves
it. Does it, though?
I think it does.
Oh, I don't. I would love to hear, Carm, 10 years later, because this is really, it's been a decade now, how much a business has really been hurt.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I could be wrong. I just remember my favorite 24-hour spot, Jack's on Tui. Once they didn't allow the smoking, their late-night business went away. That was done. people just love to go in there and smoke and have a BLT at 2 a.m., but they didn't want that BLT anymore if they didn't have their smoke, apparently.
Ugh.
When that was...
BLT couldn't have been that good then.
They had a great BLT. Now it's a Starbucks. It's the way it goes. All right, well, here. I think I'll let you guys be the judge, but I covered the Cub game on Friday for WGN, and Madden drops Schwarber down to 7, right? Mm-hmm. And then he pinch hits for him in a key spot. He brings up Al Mora, and then they bring in a righty, and then he brings up John Jay, who ends up rolling into a double play. And
Not a good look for Madden.
Well, right, he was managing like it was September, which I actually kind of liked it. Like, you're two games under 500 at that point. Let's go. Enough playing around, right?
Yeah.
So I asked him after the game, I'm like, do we have my question with it too, Daniel? We do. Okay, so here's after the game to Madden. Because, like, if you're going to – you're batting him 7, now you're pinch hitting for him. Kyle Schwarber's not used to this, so I asked him this.
Do you have to talk to Kyle about getting taken out? They're just not probably used to it and can't drop the
flat by himself. Yeah, I mean, do I have to talk to him? I do talk to him constantly. I think he understands it. I've always talked to him, so that'll be part of our conversation tomorrow. But he gets it. He's a team player first. When he gets it rolling, he's going to take off in incredible ways. But for right now, today, June 2nd, I thought it was the right thing to do, 2017.
So, okay, that's his response, right? No big deal.
Yeah.
But then I read in the Tribune, I think it was Mark Gonzalez's piece, that Madden called Schwarber Friday night to tell him he was dropping him in the lineup to 9th. So as he was thinking about it, good old at the Carm on Twitter's question, do you have to call Kyle? After, you know, I asked him after the game on Friday, that night he dialed up Schwarber and said, yo, Kyle, you're hitting 9th. And then he hits the granny, and I'd like to take credit for turning around the Cubs season. Go ahead and say if, you know, you agree, because I'm sure you do.
You know what? I actually think that you may have had some percentage of impact on that phone call. I'm actually being 100% serious right now. And so I'll give you maybe about 3% credit for the grand slam yesterday.
I'll take that 3. I will. Thank you.
You won't give me
3?
No, I'm not giving you 3. But I think you're the reason. You're part of the reason why he called. And I think that's bigger.
I mean, he, like, the way he asked the question, like, do I need to call him? Like, I was kind of thinking, like, he's, what do you think? Like, or not call, but do I need to talk to him? I talk to him all the time at the Carm. What do you mean, do I need to talk to him? Are you really asking me if I talk to his players, to my players?
He didn't throw your Twitter handle in there.
He didn't.
You know, but listening to that response from Madden, it did seem like the wheels were kind of spinning in his head as he was answering your question. I'm being dead serious. Like, he kind of, man, maybe that is, do I need to talk to him? That's a good question. And then it's almost like he decided while he was answering the question, yeah, I think I do need to talk to him.
And then he called. Bottom line, he called. And then Schwarber hit the granny. And now we're 500. As I say, I'm not on the team. No one's on the team. We're not on the team. But you got
it. I don't know. You're responsible for grand slams? Now you might as well just be a we.
You need to get paid like it now.
That's got a couple miles / continents to go on that one. Right. All right. Well, hey, 312-981-7200. Just curious if people think all is right with the Cubs. We can have that discussion coming back here a little bit. I mean, this division's so bad that maybe you shouldn't be worried about a team that's 500 through 54 games, right? And I do have some thoughts on what I would do to make them just a little bit better. Coming up at 3:30, though, we're going to have a discussion about Jason Whitlock and LeBron James and Colin Kaepernick and race intersecting with sports. Obviously, everybody has a different – well, we have a lot of interesting opinions on that, so looking forward to that. And CLTV, JP, I think you're aware, is now in HD.
Yes.
You can watch those TV simulcasts of Steve Cochran and Ro Khan, along with the latest news, weather, and traffic, all in high definition, now on Comcast Xfinity Channel 352. What else could you watch in HD at 6 o'clock?
Sports feed. Come on, man. Tonight's my first night on HD.
Oh, like, my.
I haven't been on since man.
Last week.
People have not experienced JP in HD.
Makeup ready.
Just jumping through that TV right at you.
Go.
In your living room. Quick timeout, 720 WGN.
Do you have to talk to Kyle about getting taken out? They're just not probably used to it and can't drop the flat.
Yeah, I mean, do I have to talk to him? I do talk to him constantly. I think he understands it. I've always talked to him, so that'll be part of our conversation tomorrow. But he gets it. He's a team player first. When he gets it rolling, he's going to take off in incredible ways. But for right now, today, June 2nd, I thought it was the right thing to do.
My man Joe, okay.
I love it.
See if the Cubby lineup out yet, Dan Long? Have you noticed it? Let me know when we get a Cubby lineup.
I was looking for it.
Are you watching Cubs tonight or NBA Finals?
Oh, 1,000% the NBA Finals.
Okay.
You really want to know that? All right, I'm going to watch both of them.
Well, is it going to be a 20-point game by halftime?
It could be. If the Cavs keep turning over the ball, and yeah, it could be a rough night.
I mean, I'm going to watch both too, but if you only had one TV.
I'm watching basketball.
Hogue?
Basketball.
Okay.
It's that time of the year.
I got to tell you, we'll talk about this in the 4 o'clock hour. I needed to see it in person, the whole Warriors and Cavs with Durant thing in the playoffs.
You feel a lot better now, don't you?
I do. I mean, I'm watching the first quarter on, what was it, Wednesday night? Was it Wednesday? Thursday night?
Thursday.
And it was about a week ago by now.
Yeah, right. Golden State was, in my mind, terrible, and they were still winning. I'm like, okay, they're still winning. They've missed 17 layups, and they have this 6'11 guy out there that they didn't have before who's taking the ball off the rim, pushing it up the court, dunking with nobody contesting him, guarding LeBron James, shooting threes. This is another animal. If LeBron wins this series and nobody gets hurt, that's fine. Better than Mike. This would be ridiculous. I don't think he can do it. There's just no. If he wins a game, I think it's impressive.
I'm with Carm. Hogue, you know, we've been having that conversation about Mike and LeBron, and it took me to go back and sit there and watch some old, like, real game footage of Mike, and I put it to bed. There's just no way.
You know what?
There's no way, dude. Mike was way too good. He did whatever he wanted to, and his jump shot was, man.
You know, when we had Nick Wright on a couple weeks ago, and Carm's defense was, it sounded kind of weak, right? When you just said, I saw Mike play.
Oh, okay.
You know what, though? Watching LeBron, I'm really only going off the last couple weeks, so as good as he's been in the playoffs, and it has been good, there's just something missing that Mike had. And it's like hard to quantify and say. And so, and I was thinking that the other night watching game one, and I actually was thinking about what you said to Nick Wright, Carm, because I was like, yeah, there's just all of a sudden that defense of, I saw MJ play, and that's always going to be there. It sort of made more sense to me.
It is.
Thank you.
It is.
And look, I mean, Mike's never going to win the stats anymore, but there are a lot of stats that did win.
I don't need the stats. All you have to do is watch Mike play.
More steals, more blocks, better score, more clutch, all of it. 6-0 in the finals.
The more clutch thing, like, matters a lot to me.
Yeah, but
it really does, Hogue?
It does, and it should.
Listen,
everybody's so different, though. I get it.
There's only a
couple people that are that clutch. I feel like everybody talks about him not having that clutch gene. I don't put it in the equation, though.
Who, LeBron?
Yeah, it's not in my equation.
He's hit a lot of clutch shots. He hasn't hit them like Mike's hit them, but he hit a lot of clutch ones.
It's not that, it's not so much that LeBron's not clutch. It's just that, like, all you got to do is go back to the last 2 minutes of the 98 finals.
So it's killer instinct.
And it's like, and I remember watching that live and thinking, really nervous about if this goes to game 7. Like, really not feeling good about that. And MJ just was like, we're not losing this game.
Stockton hit a three. They were up 3 with 40 seconds to go. MJ quick drive going 2-for-1. Good. Down 1. They throw it in to Malone. Strip him. Come down. Hit the jumper to win it. I mean, come on.
It's just everything in 40 seconds. He just did it all right there to win.
Yeah, he should.
And we're not talking about, we're forgetting to talk about, like, if he played right now in this era, and I know it's hard to say, he averaged like 45, 50 points.
There was one video that was going around the social media train which took the best highlight from every year in the playoffs, starting with a dunk that he had against the Milwaukee Bucks in 1985 where he ate the rim. It was so incredibly enjoyable. I really I put out on Facebook the other night, I mean, I woke up Friday night before, maybe I was having, I'm just an incredible loser, but
Tell the listeners.
Maybe it was because of the stress of the 9 a.m. tennis match that I was about to lose 6-2, 6-0, but it's 3:30 in the morning, and I'm up. And so, you know, you open up the phone. Next thing I'm on Facebook. Next thing I'm scrolling, there's Jordan videos. And I'm full on in. I mean, I was like five Jordan videos deep before I finally shared one and said, 3:33 a.m. watching Mike. I mean, there was no stopping it. I went to about 4 a.m. I can't help myself. And that is just, there's something wrong.
He's the greatest. The greatest.
Cubs lineup, by the way, out. Happ at the top. Bryant in center field, by the way. Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist at second. Hayward in right, Montero catching, Russell back at short after a day off yesterday, Hendricks pitching, and Kyle Schwarber hitting ninth in left field. I have one problem with that lineup. Anybody want to gander a guess?
Haps leading off.
I don't love that, but that's fine. I don't like, listen, he gave Addison Russell a day off yesterday. I'm pro 3-4 days off. Javi Baez played yesterday, hit a home run, hit a bomb. Addison Russell's been brutal at the plate.
So who's out today?
Baez is not playing.
Baez is out.
Yeah. And they're showing a lot of love for Ian Happ and no love for Albert Almora. Right. So
I get you.
I like Almora. I
like Almora too, and I feel like he just hasn't gotten a fair shot this season.
He's got to be frustrated. He has to be. I'm sure he's thrilled to be a Cub and all that and would say all the right things, but he has to be frustrated.
I just thought that letting Fowler go was, okay, we're going to give Almora every opportunity now. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been the case. It's almost like he's in the Soler category of, are they going to trade him?
Maybe.
Seem to love him as much as Schwarber, you know, just for comparison. They seem to love Schwarber more than Michael Jordan.
Jorge Soler, by the way, sent to the minors by the Royals. That trade looks pretty good for Theo and company.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, wow.
Nice job on that one. Wow. Good old Wade Davis. I don't know what, it's interesting because they don't want to trade any of their parts, right? So you're going to give up at Almora? I highly doubt it at this point. I think the guys that are going to go are minor leaguers like Jimenez or maybe Candelario, but I wouldn't think Happ is going to go. I don't think Almora is going to go. You listen to these guys talk, Jed, Theo, and company, and the people that are around the team all the time. I mean, it's pretty much 100% that's what everyone says. So unless they're lying or, you know, to something, maybe they can always change their mind. But right now, I think that's the case.
I just think, Carm, if you're not going to give up one of these major league guys,
yeah,
you're really not going to get a whole lot back.
Maybe you won't. Maybe you won't. Well, I mean, listen, Eloy Jimenez is, you know, that's, you're talking about a top 25 prospect in all of baseball with
that's
huge
true.
Power.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got Chapman for Torres. Can you get Yu Darvish for a package built around Jimenez? You probably can, I would think. The Astros are never going to lose a game. The Rangers probably are going to sell at some point, although I haven't looked at the wild card standings. The Houston Astros are the Cubs of last year, man. The Houston Astros are down like 8-2 in the eighth. They score 15 runs and beat Minnesota. The Astros are insane right now.
They're awesome. That was my World Series pick, Astros-Cubs.
You for real?
Yeah. I love the Astros coming in this season. Them and the Rockies.
I gave the Rockies some love.
Rockies are coming on up here. People are texting in on LeBron. LeBron is has nothing original. That's why Jordan is the GOAT. The song says, be like Mike, not want to be like LeBron. Right? All that's true. But, I mean,
it just...
JB, you don't want to dog LBJ.
I love LeBron. I love LeBron. I think I'm a LeBron fan. I love watching him, and I respect him. But I've been battling back and forth, and all it took me was to sit down for a good 30 minutes and watch game film of Michael Jordan, and it brought back memories. And I just said, I saw this. I actually had a chance to watch this. There's no – Mike was just crazy dominant, man, the best that I've ever seen.
I mean, my thing with
but then hold up. But yeah. Then I'm battling with my grandpa, who's telling me that you never saw Bill Russell play, you never saw Wilt play. So it keeps going on and on from every generation to generation. Everybody thinks that their guy that they got a chance to see was the best.
Grandpa's got to chill.
But grandpa, I can't tell grandpa to chill.
You can tell grandpa.
No, I can't, man.
You take Gramp, with all due respect.
I can't.
Do you know who Bill Russell was going up against? Come on, Gramp. He was going up against you, Gramp. There was no
one. Oh, don't give me that advice, dude. I shouldn't say that to my grandpa, right?
Probably not. There's probably one that you just sort of let go, but in your head you're thinking, chill out, Grandpa.
Is that mom's side, grandpa?
Mom's side.
Copay, yeah, grandpa. Yeah,
yeah. I love those family conversations where you're just sort of in your head going, yep, yeah, sure, yep, I got you 100%. And inside you're going, what the heck is he talking about?
Well, we'll give a little credit to Hawk Harrelson, and props to Hawk for everything he's done in his career and calling it a career at the end of next season a little bit later in the show. But I thought one of the interesting comments from Hawk this week, speaking about him himself retiring alongside what you're saying now, Hawk was like, hey, man, the players today are way better than they were when I played. The greats would have been great. Willie Mays would have been great in any era. Yaz would have been great in any era. But a player like myself versus the guys who are role players now, not even close.
Yeah, that's how I feel about every sport. Like the greats, you can pick them up and place them in whatever era and they would still dominate or do what they did. And there's a handful of those guys.
Bigger, stronger, faster though nowadays. I mean, looking
at every sport. Yep. Yeah.
In every single sport. I mean, look at the way Adam Ho covers the Bears and does talk shows now compared to what they did in the 60s.
And
it's
he
not
plays
close.
Arena football too.
Right.
You didn't know that.
Right.
I would have dominated 1960s sports talk radio because it didn't even exist then.
You would have been number one, baby.
Number one.
That's why, and we're going to be out this week, right, Hogue, at TC Boost, right?
We are. We're going out there, guys, at TC Boost, and we're, you know, bigger, stronger, faster. We're going to be the smallest and skinniest and not strongest. But we're going to do our best, right, Carm?
Yes, we are. When are we doing that, Tuesday?
Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning, right. Tuesday's my surgery. I was freaking out.
What are you going to do Wednesday? You can't do anything Wednesday.
Are you going to be good by Wednesday?
Yes, I'll be great. I'm ready to go. If not, I'll do legs. All right, news at 3:30 is sponsored by American Weather Makers. A lot of talk on race this week as LeBron James had the N-word put on his huge mansion in Los Angeles, and some people speaking out on it, including Jason Whitlock, in a way that was attacking LeBron. We're going to discuss that after the 3:30 news. Here is Bob Kessler.
After 7 people were killed last night in the attack in London and 21 in critical condition, London's police counterterrorism chief says the public there should expect to see increased security measures. Security cordons will remain around London Bridge, where parts of the attack took place, and they'll be there indefinitely. Bill Cosby does not plan to testify at his sexual assault trial, but the remarkable testimony he gave a decade ago in the accuser's lawsuit could still prove pivotal. She'll take the stand this week. And autopsies are expected on the bodies of 2 women and an infant girl found in a Joliet house fire. Firefighters found those bodies on the second floor of a 2-story home after responding around 2 a.m. Saturday to the blaze. We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
No matter how much money you have, no matter how famous you are, no matter how many people admire you, you know, being black in America is tough. And we got a long way to go, you know, for us as a society and for us as African Americans until we feel equal.
So that, of course, LeBron James. Welcome back in. Good afternoon. It's The Beat. I'm Mark Harmon. He's Adam Hoge. He's Jared Payton. That was at a news conference before the start of the NBA Finals, and LeBron had a racist slur put on the gate of his mansion in California, and LeBron stepped up and talked about it, which, I don't know, I thought that was pretty open, pretty cool. Your thoughts, guys? I mean, any problem with what LeBron James said here, calling everybody?
Go first.
I don't know how you could have a problem with it. I mean, I thought he handled it very, very well. I thought he handled it eloquently. I mean, it's tough for me to ever kind of put myself in his shoes and dealing with that, but it can't be easy. It's got to be really hard. You got to be angry, right? You have to. I know he's just happy that no one was home and no one really had to, maybe, you know, stumble upon it. But I mean, that's not an easy situation. And for him to come out and address it the way he did right before the finals are starting, I mean, talk about a distraction. How could it not be a distraction, right? And LeBron, I thought, handled it great. So I don't know how anyone could have a problem with his side of it.
Yeah, I have no issue. I just think that we're living in different times now, and athletes are living in different times with social media and how we get our news and our information. And we were talking about Mike, and we said just recently, and Mike, after life after basketball, he started talking more about other stuff that's going on. But during his career, he didn't hear that. But now we see things have changed. I'm cool with him speaking out on it because he's got a platform, and it brings it out there, and it has discussion, and it opens up lines of communication so people can discuss like we're doing right now.
So there was one guy who had an issue with it. His name, if you have not heard, his name is Jason Whitlock, who, of course, has been a national columnist for a long time, Fox Sports, ESPN. Now he's with Fox Sports One. All Takes Matter is his show. He called it a quote-unquote disrespectful inconvenience, the racial slur that was spray-painted on LeBron's home. And he basically says that, look, LeBron, racism and you, that's not a thing.
Racism is an issue in America, but it is primarily an issue for the poor. It's not LeBron James's issue. LeBron James, whether he likes it or not, or whether people close to him are telling him or not, he has removed himself from the damages and the ravages of real racism. He may have an occasional disrespectful interaction with someone, a disrespectful inconvenience.
There you go. The disrespectful inconvenience. I don't know. Listen, I'm not LeBron James. You're not LeBron James. Jared, you can speak on this, I think, better. Clearly much better than both Adam and I. A, you're the son of 34. And B, you're African American. Yeah. So this is more your highway. But if I was coming home to my Jewish household and there was a Jewish slur on there, I would feel like I was feeling racism. Yeah, if I had no money in my wallet or $1 million in my wallet.
Yeah, I'm gonna go off the cuff real quick. So, I don't agree with what Jason Whitlock was talking about. I see the point that he was trying to make, but it doesn't matter how much money you have in your pocket. Doesn't matter where you come from. It happens to everybody. Being a black man in America, when I'm in this city and I walk around and I go places, most people here in the city, if I go somewhere that we either I know somebody there or people are very, very respectful here in Chicago. Let's say I go outside of this city. I go somewhere and I walk into maybe an expensive store or what people think is an expensive store, and you get followed around and put people asking you, are you sure you can pay for that? And you're like, what? Like, what's going on here?
Where did that happen?
It's happened in my lifetime as I've grown up in multiple places.
Right.
And
you don't want to throw him under the bus?
No.
I'd love to see you do it.
Because I still shop there.
You still go.
I mean, you know what? I'm not going to let somebody just because.
It's one person in the store. It's not the store.
It's just one person. But we all deal with this. And I remember growing up and hearing stories of my dad and Hogue. I was telling Carmis during the break that he dealt with stuff when he was breaking Jim Brown's record. Now, let's go back to it. My dad was breaking a African-American's record in the NFL. It wasn't like he was breaking, you know, a white guy's record or whatever. He was receiving mail from people who seemed to be of a different race who were throwing a lot of stuff in there saying, we're going to kill you with the N-word. There was a lot of stuff that went on. So it doesn't matter how much money you have or how famous you are, it happens to everybody. And just for him to say that, I mean, the fact that he's dealing with it right now, and it's not an inconvenience, it happened.
Yeah. I'm assuming, JP, you wouldn't chalk that up as an occasional disrespectful occurrence or however Jason Whitlock put it. I mean, your father got death threats.
Yes.
I don't care who you are, how much money you have. That's scary.
Yeah, it's weird, man. It's a weird. Listen, Hogue, Carm, it's a weird situation. Like, even growing up, certain times of these people and sending letters saying, like, we couldn't even go to school without, like, people going to school with us at a period of time because people said they were going to try to kidnap your kids and this and that. Crazy people out there. Yeah. Crazy. And listen, the N-word, and when you see it and what it means. Even being in football and hearing it all the time around guys in the locker room, it was something that I thought was normal. And then when I got out of football, it's a word that I had to stop using even around my friends because of understanding what the word means. And it's, I mean, there's a lot of issues going on.
Well, it's what's also crazy about it, it's like, look, Jason Whitlock or whoever who have to have a definitive opinion on what's appropriate to say and what's not appropriate to say. What should he have said? Hey, it's no big deal. Whatever. One racial spray painting on a house. It's cleaned up. It's gone. That person is obviously a person that's filled with hate, and I'm just glad I'm not him. He could have said that. But he's really not going hard enough. He should go further into the issues, like, right?
You'll never win.
Right. And that's one. And Carb, that's exactly what I have a huge problem with this too. I mean, there's so many layers to what Jason Whitlock said, but one of them is just like on the standpoint of what we do for a living. It seems like some guys just like wake up in the morning and are like, "I gotta have a take." So, whichever way LeBron had gone, it's like Jason Whitlock would have gone the other way. You know, because how could you really, again, getting back to how we started this segment, you heard what LeBron said. We just played that for you. What is there to take issue with? There's like, no, I don't understand it. And yet Jason Whitlock comes out with this fiery take, and this is what they do on these. This was on Colin Cowherd's show, right?
Yes.
He called up Colin Cowherd and asked him, "Kay, can I be a guest on your show?"
Was this the TV, the debate show, or was this his radio show?
This is his radio show.
But it's also on TV.
Right, but you know what I mean. It's not that. What's that?
They have their show.
Isn't Colin Cowherd on one of those debate shows, too?
I don't think he is. But
He is. Him and Whitlock have a show together.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's right.
Is that the All That Matters show?
Yeah, I think
that's All Takes Matter.
All Takes Matter.
That's why I was confused if it was on that, because I feel like those are the shows that are kind of fueling this, look, we got to argue with each other whether we believe it or not type deal. Look, all I say is on this radio show with the three of us, you're going to always get our real opinions. I mean, I'm never going to just wake up and say, oh, you know what? I need people to hear me today, so I'm going to say this outrageous thing just so people listen. Like, that's inauthentic. And that's – I don't know how you could look at this any other way with what Jason Whitlock said than inauthentic, because it seems hard to believe – It's hard for me to believe that he can believe what he actually said. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, here, let's play one more of it where he basically attacks LeBron for embracing being a victim.
This is where I struggle with LeBron James. He has fallen into the far left trap of there's value in embracing your victimhood. And so LeBron, I watched his press conference. I saw it yesterday, saw it again today. And his comments analogizing any part of this to Emmett Till is preposterous.
So, and he did reference Emmett Till, and I don't think he was equating his experience to being a 14-year-old guy going to Alabama and allegedly, although it was highly disputed that he ever whistled at a white woman, and that's why he was brutally murdered in one of the worst racial attacks in the history of this country. To me, it was impressive that he has knowledge of history, period, and he's willing to talk about it. I don't think he was saying it was equal.
No.
So
Whitlock needs to just give it up. I mean, to me, it comes down to whoever's putting money in his pocket, and that's Fox. So, I mean, that's the big deal. I mean, you start thinking about it. I'm with you, Hogue, about taking these takes, these guys getting up, and just feeling like, well, you know, we need more clicks on the website. That's what it seems like to me, because from the conversation with LeBron, he sounded like a guy that is knowledgeable about what's going on, and he's going to voice his opinion, and basically that's it, and that he's aware of what's going on. I would not want an athlete, and when people say athletes are not role models, they are, to get up and just be like, brush it off like it's not an issue. It's an issue. It needs to be talked about.
And Jason is fine to have his opinion, if this is opinion, but like to attack him is out of bounds.
Yeah, we need a better soundbite from LeBron James to be able to attack him.
Let's be clear here, because I don't think any of us are disagreeing with what I'm assuming is his initial premise that, you know, it's harder to be poor.
No, we're not.
Right?
No.
I mean, no one's trying to say that that's not true. I think the part we're all taking issue with is then to turn around, though, and try to claim that the rich aren't also experiencing racism.
Yeah.
It's just that can't be true, and I'm glad you're here, JP, because, I mean, for you to give that example with your father, I mean, it's just, it's a perfect example of it. So,
well, I mean, Thabo Sefolosha is an NBA player who wound up on the ground in New York City, who ended up having a huge lawsuit and getting $5 million from the New York City police. He was at a club doing nothing. I mean, that's an NBA player that happened, by the way, nearly yesterday.
And I don't know all the facts, but I've seen it on a lot of different shows about soccer players over in Europe and what they deal with as well at games. And some of the racial chants that those guys go through and playing a game and fearing for their safety on the soccer pitch, it's ridiculous.
James Blake is an African American tennis player who was violently accosted by police in New York City as well. And by the way, I'm not trying to attack police people at all. They do a phenomenal job. Please understand that. But these are real life experiences that we see happen. It's not just to the poor person in the worst neighborhoods in the country, which we have not done a very good job at. In making that situation better ever. But it does happen to wealthy African Americans all the time.
Yeah.
And these are just people that you would hear about because they are huge or at least moderately big names in James Blake or Thabo Sefolosha or whoever you want to throw out there.
Wealthy minorities across the board. It happens to everybody, man. It's crazy. And the biggest thing is that we... And Hogue, as you know, raising your son, you know that's where it starts. It starts from when these kids are born and what they either see or what they hear and what they're around. They become a product of their environment. Doesn't mean that they have to stay that way, but that's where a lot of these things are learned from as young kids growing up. And I think that's where we have to start.
Text line. Nope. Sorry, so you text line 2242, liberal white morons on WGN.
I'm not...
He's not talking about you. It's just me and Adam.
Okay.
What?
No, see, that's what we call a troll.
What?
Because I don't think anything we've said that.
Yeah, what part?
If you're claiming that rich people can experience racism too, that's a liberal take.
Why is that liberal? How could that? What are you talking?
It's just someone trying to get a read. Someone's trying to get you to read his text on the air.
You just did it.
No problem.
And you did it.
I got you. I got you. Yeah. I got you, buddy. Or I should. Yeah, it could
you
be
never
a,
know.
Could be a female. Who knows?
You never know.
I just, man. What we're trying to do here, and what LeBron, we like to talk about what's going on in sports and in the world, and especially when they intersect. That's cool. And LeBron James, he could have said nothing. He could have gotten up there and done zero. There's plenty of athletes that have done that. 23 in this town might not have said a word. I don't think there was ever anything that happened in HP on either Windy Hill, his old home, or at the gate. But if there was. You know, Michael wasn't that way, and that's
I'm sure
fine.
Someone was sending him death threats though at some point over something.
I do remember that actually when he was young, there was like some death threat at some arenas. Like he's like, I wasn't worried about it. I had my Air Jordans on, I'd be good.
Well, and even go back, I'm not going to get into this because I don't want to. I mean, all you can get is documented, but go back. I don't even know my dad would say anything because if you go back and look at how my grandpa's death was handled back in the day, my dad's dad. My dad didn't talk about it, and it's out there if you go and look and research. I mean, it was in down south, white cops and how it was handled and the way that my dad went about it. He didn't really say much, and he went on with what he was doing. So it happens to everybody. My dad was who he was, not at that level yet of where he ended his career, but he was still a well-known person.
So I should have known that story. Maybe I feel like I read it once.
It's right before I was born. I never got to meet my dad's.
And what was the story?
It's
too much.
Yeah, it's too much. It's out there. All you have to do is go look and find it.
I got you. All right, let's take a quick timeout. If you want to jump in on the conversation, feel free. 312-981-7200. We will lighten it up at 4. I feel like, people, I know talking race gets a little heavy. There is an interesting Cubs angle that ties in with LeBron that Paul Sullivan wrote about in the Tribune. I want to just bring that up real quick coming back here. 720 WGN. Adam Hogue, when the Cubs won the World Series, did you go down to Wrigley Field and write on the wall?
No, I did not. I did not do that.
As a lifelong White Sox fan, you didn't go down to Clark and Addison and write on the wall. I'm shocked.
I should have gone down there though and written on the wall. 2005 did happen.
Ooh, that would have been a good one. That would have been good.
Right?
Did you write on the wall, JP?
No, I didn't get a chance to.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm bringing it up and how it ties into LeBron, if you didn't see Paul Sullivan's piece at the Tribune, it's kind of... I wasn't expecting this from Sully, but this is a good deep dive. Last year, right, everybody was writing on the wall, and it was super cool for my grandfather, for whoever, all heartfelt tributes. But of course, the Cubs are renovating Wrigley Field, so they had their third phase, so that wall had to come down. But they took a picture of the outer wall, and they put that picture. It is down underneath, just outside the Cubs clubhouse in their whole little dungeon that they've created down there. And on that wall is the F word and LeBron. Because LeBron, of course, if you remember, in Game 7 was jumping up and down going crazy representing the tribe. And Rajay Davis, when he hit the three-run homer off Aroldis, and he was rooting for the Cavs. So the Cubs didn't Photoshop out the F word and LeBron. It's on the wall. And Sully just started walking around asking questions to Rizzo and Hayward and company. Should the Cubs have...
No, leave it the way it is.
Well, and some of the players he talked to didn't even know it was on there.
Right, right. They didn't even know it was there because they don't, you know, walk... It's not in their clubhouse. It's outside the clubhouse. It's kind of more like where the media walks through. They don't really go that way. And who really ever takes a ton of time just to stand there in front of the picture and read every single message anyway?
There's Sully.
Sully.
That's it.
Sully's got time on his hands, man. There's, you know, you get baseball reporters, they got to get there at 3 o'clock for a night game. They're there all day, and, you know, Sully's not, you know, on the beat anymore, but he's, you know, doing columns and whatnot, so he's got some time. And apparently he read everything on that wall, and he found the LeBron thing. And then he started poking around. What a good reporter. I love Sully.
Gotta love Sully.
And I got no problem, by the way. Leave it on there. That's what happened. Yeah. And it's funny, really.
You don't want to delete history? Photoshop history?
I mean, I was screaming at LeBron last year. Sit down. It was terrible.
No one needs you.
And then, of course, he had to show up at the United Center in a Cubs jersey. Thank you, D-Wade.
That was
You're,
awesome.
Yeah, he lost his bet. And look, he's from the Cleveland area. He's allowed to root for his hometown team. And he should have. And then they lost. So, sorry, man. That's how it goes. But it got written on the wall. Whoever did it probably shouldn't have, but it was there. So I like that the Cubs didn't take it out.
Right.
And no one with the Cubs actually, like, is supporting it.
Yeah. It was just on there.
That
what would you have done, though? Would you have?
No, I would
have. You would have left it on there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of history. There's no harm, no foul. These things happen. You get... a little aggressive, although that's, you know, to write it on the wall,
yeah,
that's days, months, whenever that person walked up there, to still hold that hatred is a little bitter. Right? I mean, they did win the World Series, right? And LeBron is allowed to cheer for his favorite team, the Cleveland Indians, I guess, even though I've seen him in a Yankees hat a bunch of times too.
Oh, he's a Yankees fan.
Okay, so he's just representing.
It's a big Yankees.
What do they call Cleveland?
These celebrities in there. You see Carrie Underwood? Carrie Underwood at the Predators game?
You know, what'd she do?
She's just singing in the stands. You know, like, so people post those, like, selfie videos of themselves singing along, and they're drunk, and they sound terrible?
Yeah. Well,
in her case, it's Carrie Underwood, so she still sounds amazing.
Mm.
That's awesome. Not fair.
Big not fan. Fair, but it's kind of cool.
Hey, it's cool. On that, the two liberal guys on WGN, I wonder if that person's a Blackhawks fan. Did you see the Instagram post from Jonathan Toews?
Yes, I did. That was a cool post.
How about that? That crazy liberal, Jonathan Toews, who actually cares about the climate. He put it out on Instagram. Do you believe in climate change? Whether you're super pumped that we're putting America first or absolutely outraged at the idea that we're taking yet another step backwards in dealing with a major global problem. This is Jonathan Toews, by the way. The only way to solve this argument is to try and set your own agenda aside and see how this affects everybody. The only lie we tell ourselves is that we are more special than other life forms on the planet. Well, we're not. Even if we weren't responsible for any major climate catastrophes heading our way, shouldn't we still do our part to preserve what we have left? The same way that we shouldn't wait till our bodies break down completely to start doing the right things to stay healthy. Let's not wait until it's too late to do something. I'm not saying I'm perfectly, quote, green, But the first step is to keep an open mind and to try to learn what you don't already know. Jonathan Taves on Instagram. Go, Captain.
I love it.
Speak to the planet, baby.
Eloquent.
Right?
Hard to argue with, no matter what side you're on in that. And I'm sure Jason Whitlock will have a take tomorrow.
What's one thing you can do better for the climate, Adam Hogue?
One thing I could do better for the climate.
For the environment is a better way to ask that question.
Yeah. I do recycle, but I'm probably not as I don't probably put enough effort into recycling every little thing. You know what I mean?
Okay, a little more recycle effort, JP. Yeah.
We're pretty good at recycling at my house. So.
You take long showers? You go super?
No, I take short showers. Uh-huh. Everybody in the house, we're in and out. So we try to do our part.
What about when you brush your teeth? You shut the water off when you're just in the brush for?
You know what? That's probably one thing I could do
there
better.
There you go. That's one. See, now if everybody did that.
We would. Look, I love you.
You feel me? You feel me? All right. Well, there
that's
we go.
One thing, yeah.
There we go. There's one. That's my easy one because nobody does that. All right. Moving on here. Coming up after 4 o'clock. What are we doing after 4 o'clock, Hogue? You put the rundown together, didn't you?
Yeah, I did it. First of all, I should mention the White Sox have come back to tie the Tigers.
Wow.
4-4 in the ninth. They were down 4-2, and they have a runner on right now, threatening in the ninth. But coming after 4 o'clock news, we're going to talk a little bit more about Game 2 of the NBA Finals. And we touched on it a little bit earlier, but do the Cavs have any chance at all, because after one game, it doesn't really look that way. But guess what? After one game last year, it didn't really look like they had a chance either.
Ooh! Hoagie sleeping on maybe giving a little Cleveland love tonight. All right, we'll see.
We lose!
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The beat is on.
720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
WGN 4:06. Hope you're having a great Sunday. With you till 6 today. JP's got Sports Feed tonight on CLTV at 6. Who's your partner tonight, pal?
Josh Freiman.
Oh, okay, you got the A crew.
Got the A crew tonight.
When's Josh Freiman coming on the show? Why is he always dodging?
We can get him on the show. He would love to be on our show. Okay. He gets mad at me. He feels like that I never asked him to, but I have once.
What'd he say?
He couldn't do it that day.
Oh, okay.
Well, once isn't a lot.
It's not, but still, I asked him once.
How does Josh look in HD?
You probably have to ask him because I haven't seen him.
Guy looks phenomenal.
He's got to look phenomenal.
Great looking man.
Yeah, good suits, everything.
Love what he brings to the table. We're going to get to the NBA in a second here in the finals in Game 2 tonight and how I actually think that the Golden State Warriors could compete with the Chicago Bulls of the 90s, but I still think the Bulls win. I kind of doing the matchups and playing around with it. And we might talk about this a little bit later too, but I just wanted to give a little bit of love to Jimmy Pearsall, who is one of the great baseball voices the city has ever had. Him and Harry doing White Sox games back in the 70s and passing away at 87 years old yesterday. And, of course, did a ton of radio in this town at a place where you used to work, Adam Hogue, at the Score. And Jimmy was always honest and fun and entertaining and phenomenal and unique. I mean, there's been nobody like that guy. So, he hasn't been on, for a long time now. But I loved listening to Jimmy Pearsall, and I wish that I had been more in the White Sox days, TV, older when yeah. Pearsall and Harry were calling games. Because, he was making comments like, Harry would say to him, "You take your pills today," and all sorts of that type of stuff. I mean, that's some good television.
So, yeah, that's a team I wish I could have enjoyed. I'm a little bit too young for that. But, you hear the stories and just, there's certain names in this city that kind of always live on forever, especially in what we do. And Jimmy Pearsall is definitely one of those guys.
And if you want any thoughts on Jimmy, 312-981-7200, we'll take some texts on. I'm sure people have some stories who enjoyed. Of course, he broadcast for the White Sox, but he was with the Cubs as well as a roving minor league instructor, worked with their outfielders and was a great Boston Red Sox back in the day, two-time Gold Glove winner, all of that. Great player. Funny story with Ked Hawk Harrelson, who was talking about him, saying Hawk was like going out to the outfield and Jimmy was coming in. He like ran up to him and said something. "You know who I am?" "Yes, I do, Mr. Pearson." "Well, don't you ever forget it, buddy." I mean,
classic.
So yeah, Jimmy was the man. All right. anybody thinking that Golden State at 13-0 in the playoffs right now?
Wow.
Let's put this together. 73 wins last year, blew the finals. 60-plus team, high 60s the year before. You've got one title in the books, you have one where you've blown, and then you added on Kevin Durant.
It's not fair.
This is an unbelievable basketball team.
Yep.
And if you match them up with the 91 Bulls, right, I think Mike guards Steph. I think Pax guards Clay. I think Scotty guards Durant. I think Horace takes Draymond. And then you've got Cartwright and Zaza Pachulia. I like our chances. But that's a series right there.
It's a series. I mean, they got Mike.
Right? What do you think, Hogue?
I wish we could watch that.
Right? I mean, that's a great series.
That sounds really fun seeing. And it kind of the clash of two eras, right? In the way the game was played, the more physical 90s versus now, and the Warriors chucking up the amount of shots they do. But it would be really, really, really fun to watch. You know, in this series. Last week, Carm, you were really concerned about who was going to guard LeBron.
Uh huh.
And you were trying to think about Iguodala from last year, and could he, Durant looked pretty good doing it in Game One.
I was dead wrong. I mean, Kevin Durant is up for the challenge.
He is.
At least for that first game, he sure looked like it.
Right. I mean, he's 6'11". He's taking charges on him. He's bothering him at the rim. I was impressed, big time impressed.
Super
and
impressed.
And he seemed like the only one out there that could really do it. I mean, if he's all in on guarding LeBron, and someone needs to be, and it didn't really hurt him offensively, obviously. I mean, that was just a phenomenal Game 1 performance by Kevin Durant.
All right, so first of all, I didn't get the answer. You guys were talking about how this would be a great matchup to watch. Why can't we get it on a video game? We have all these video games. Why can't they set up like the simulation? You could pick this team and just watch it on video games. It would be unbelievable. But it comes down to watching how, I mean, it's hard to stop. When you have so many weapons, it's hard to stop. And so the role players, you know, the guys on the Cavs team have to be able, they live and die by hitting that three. They have to, guys night in and night out have to get hot. J.R. Smith has to get hot. Like, each one of them has to pick up. I mean, Korver has to get hot.
Right.
They can't be 1-for-11 from threes. That's not going to work against this team.
Like, say LeBron gets his 40, and Steph and Kyrie gets 30. You're at 70. You got to get to 110. Where are you getting that other 40 points? Kevin Love's giving you 15. He was awful in Game 1.
He was rebounding, though. He gets you those boards.
He was getting boards, but he's got to put the ball in the basket. I can't see Cleveland doing this.
Do you see him winning a game?
I don't know. I think they get one because of LeBron, but I don't see, and maybe even two. But that would be like two wins would be incredible. Like back in the day when Mike would beat Detroit twice when Scottie Pippen wasn't Scottie Pippen and Horace wasn't Horace, and you had whoever, you know, Pax or Hodges or whoever. I mean, it was a massive, massive uphill climb against one of the best teams in NBA history. That's basically how I kind of see where they're at right now.
Well, look, there's a couple things here, and I do agree that you mentioned this earlier, Carm, and it is true. The Warriors still could have played better in Game 1.
Right?
Like, that's the scary thing. However, I think the Cavs could have played a lot better.
That's true.
Because the turnovers were out of control, and that's got to be the biggest thing that they improve here tonight in Game 2. But we talked about it too. I mean, the bench, the guys coming off the bench. I mean, Kyle Korver, look, man, you're still in the NBA to knock down threes. You better come in and hit those shots, right? That's what they need. And so that's why I think there is at least one, maybe two games here the Cavs can still win, because I think they'll play better, especially in Cleveland. I think some of those shots will go down from other guys, not named Kyrie, not named Kevin Love, not named LeBron James. I think they'll start to get that help. But the thing that really has impressed me about this Warriors team during this run in the playoffs is it's not just they added Durant. Don't they seem deeper? Like, to get JaVale McGee coming off the bench playing that way, they just seem
McGee,
to be
Livingston, Iguodala.
But you're not getting the normal production out of Clay like you would.
That's
like
true.
You're used to either. So they're still doing it. That's crazy.
312-981-7200. Bulls versus the Warriors. Let's play it right out here on WGN. We can do the 96 to 98 version of the Bulls too. What's up, Matt? Welcome to WGN. Go ahead, man.
Hey, how's it going? I really admire you guys' ideas, and you know I respect your ideas on the subject. But there's no way that any kind of team in the 2017 season could go against the Bulls of old. This just wouldn't happen. There's a different skill set from the 90s Bulls and the 2017 NBA teams. It's just you got too many better players than they got.
Matt, you know they're 13-0, pal. They're killing teams,
okay, 13-0. Did you see the last game Michael Jordan played against the Utah Jazz?
Uh-huh.
Karl Malone, Stockton, all those good players. That's a real NBA final game. The finals that you're going to see this year is going to see LeBron getting carried off to the bench just like a couple years ago.
Oh, hold on here, Matt, because let's just play this out for 1 second, because you're talking right about Bulls Jazz Game 6, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's just see how good you are here, pal. How many points did MJ have in that game?
I don't know how many points he had, but he had a lot, and it was they were hard points to get.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see what he had to go against?
Yeah.
To get those points.
Yeah, that's my point.
I mean, that is real skill right there.
Right. That's my point. He had 45 in that game on 15-35.
45.
Right. Okay. And they won 87-86. So he had more than half their points. My point is that you're going up against a pretty solid Warriors team. You had 15 from Kukoc in that game, and then you got nothing from everybody else. Harper had 8.
Right.
Pippen had 8. Well, right. Luke Longley didn't score in 14 minutes. Dennis Rodman had 7 points and 8 rebounds. Not exactly a great game. The Bulls were on fumes, man. I still think they would have won a 90. That team against this. But I'm saying that team. My point is that team against that Warriors team with all that firepower, they're a little bit of trouble, Matt. They are.
It's you're so true, right? But what it is last year they did the exact same thing. They're so great. They won all those games in a row, you know, throughout the playoffs. And then what happened?
Matt, they added Kevin Durant to their team. You're forgetting that this year. They added Kevin Durant to their squad. This is last year is last year. This is a different team. And you talk about all the great players, Malone, Hornacek, Stockton, Russell. Yeah, but look at this roster as well. This Golden State team has some guys that are going to be, when it's all said and done, are going to be up there with some of the best in the game.
Right. Appreciate the phone call, man. I mean, Hoagie, I don't know where you come out of this.
Well, the one matchup I would look forward the most to watching would be Michael guarding Stephon Curry. Because I think he would just – I think Curry would have more problems with Jordan guarding him than he's had in any of these playoff series.
See, and that's why, like, when I talk about how they would match it up, I like a nice young MJ, a little quicker MJ first version, title MJ guarding against Steph. You put MJ, old MJ, against Steph – I'm starting to think about the Allen Iverson clip where Mike looked a little rough.
We can't be picking which we got to go with a year.
Well, I'm gonna take the whole era of what Golden State's about to throw up, which is going to be at least 2, maybe 3, perhaps 4 or 5 titles against the 6 out of 8 Bulls. Like there's a whole concoction in there that you can boil together. The Warriors with that first version, they ain't beating the Bulls. The Warriors with Durant, I still think we get them, but that's pretty tight.
It'd be a good series, wouldn't it be? Hey, quick update. Tigers with a walk-off home run off the White Sox, a 3-run homer from Justin Upton.
Who gave that up?
David Robertson was in. It wasn't a save situation. He was just in a 4-4 game and trying to keep it going. And the Tigers walk it off and sweep the White Sox this weekend in Detroit.
Sox bullpen's been great all year. Not obviously today, but... What's that, 5 in a row now, huh?
5 in a row.
I think they've lost 5 in a row.
Losses?
Yeah.
See, you know what the great thing is? I don't really have to care many in a row that they've lost. I mean, you can count it up, but...
Just know that I'm paying attention to your White Sox, Hogue. That's 5
well,
losses
I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. All right. Hey, this week, Chicago's best has it all covered when it comes to what goes inside that tortilla. Don't miss Chicago's best tacos this Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV, 312-981-7200. Any thoughts on the Bulls versus the Warriors are certainly welcome. Tonight's game as well. And then there was this guy by the name of Jimmy Butler who appeared on little Jimmy Kimmel at an aquarium. And Jimmy going to the Lakers coming up, 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Sunday. He is Adam Hoge. He's Jared Payton. I'm Mark Harmon with you till 6. You know this tune, JP? You're doing a little something over there.
No, just listen to the sample.
Okay. We're going to get to Jimmy Butler and his appearance with Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Butler just, he knows how to do it. Doesn't he?
He's so good. He's so good at putting the right things out there in the media, man. Gotta love it.
We mentioned in the last segment that our condolences to Jimmy Pearsall and,
I would recommend if I-
and his family.
A lot of Jimmys.
Yeah, Jimmy everywhere.
Jimmy Butler, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Pearsall.
Ed called in here, wants to say something about Jimmy Pearsall, so let's bring Ed onto the program. Okay. Go ahead, Ed. Welcome to WGN.
All right. We had a couple of humorous moments with Jimmy, I remember, many years ago. He's with the New York Mets.
Uh-huh.
At the end of his career, and he was playing center field against the Cardinals in St. Louis, and there was a real close play at first base, and then there's a heated argument about the call, you know, and he was nose to nose, but Jimmy was playing center field, but he was what ended up arguing with the umpire at first base. He ran all the way in to argue the call.
What?
From center field.
That's awesome.
I remember that. And then another incident was in the when Jimmy was playing for the California Angels in New York Stadium, you know, or the old stadium, and didn't see Pee Wee Reese and Dizzy Dean did the games on CBS, and they're panning the outfield as they're changing pitchers, and Jimmy had disappeared, and he's nowhere to be seen, and they had another camera behind the wall at center field, and they panned it down there. He was laying behind the wall on the shadow of Babe Ruth's monument there to take a little snooze between as they're changing pitchers. So I thought those are a couple of exceptional moments in Jimmy's storied history, huh?
Thanks for sharing, Ed. Appreciate you.
Thanks, Ed.
All right.
312-981-7200, 87 years old Jimmy Pearsall, passing away yesterday.
Just seems like he was a character.
Yeah. Jimmy, there's a certain populace of baseball fans in this city that hold Jimmy Pearsall as basically a broadcasting, I don't know about God, but somewhere around there.
Okay.
As far as just pure entertainment for talking White Sox baseball, Harry Carey, that era. Of course, then Harry came over to the Cubs. The rest was history. One of the great Jerry Reinsdorf had a great comment about Jimmy Pearsall. I said something along the lines of, the guy knows everything about baseball. He's just not the biggest businessman of all time. Something along those lines.
I understand.
You know, criticizing the product might not be great for business, that type of thing.
It's not good for business.
Adam Hoge would never do that. He would never criticize the product. Right, right. So, all right, here, let's play a little bit of Jimmy Butler. Out in L.A., living that L.A. dream, brings his trainers wherever he wants to go. L.A.'s got the second pick in the draft. Bulls are trying to rebuild. Jimmy says he wants to be in Chicago, but then it kind of sounded to me like he wouldn't mind being out in L.A.
Do you watch the playoffs and the finals and that sort of thing when you're not in them?
I don't really watch, but it's kind of hard not to pay attention. Everywhere I go, especially here in L.A., everybody's, oh, he's coming to the Lakers. He's in L.A.
Yeah.
That's not
You're it. Not coming to the Lakers? Why aren't you coming to the Lakers?
Because I love Chicago so very much. And okay. thank you, Chicago. And they
Wait
took a
it.
Chance at me in 2011 with the 30th pick. So I'm forever grateful
Just
for that.
Just for the record, I happen to be a Lakers fan. I think you should stay in Chicago because you've built a foundation there. You should stay there your whole career. Is that what you want to do?
I feel like you just insulted me. You're saying you're a Lakers fan. I'm not good enough to play on the Lakers.
I would love it if you were on the team, but I also think it's important that certain players stay with their franchise, like Kobe did. It would have been all right, then come to the Lakers. Okay.
So, I mean, Butler was legit staring Jimmy Kimmel down and wanted to punch him in the face like, hey, man, you would love me on the Lakers. Are you kidding me?
It kind of came out that way, though.
Right?
Like, it kind of came out like Kimmel didn't want him on the Lakers. So I don't blame him for reacting that way. In fact, I like the first part he said, that you know, the Bulls took a chance on him. They did.
Doesn't that get old, though, at some point? Yeah, okay, they took a chance, and you paid that back in spades. You've been the face of the franchise for a while.
It doesn't go like that. I think he truly believes that. He wants to be here in Chicago. Just
really?
Yeah.
Okay, you're Jimmy Butler, right?
Yeah, it's Chicago.
Jimmy Butler has an aquarium in his house that's got 50 fish the size of Montana. Doesn't that scream L.A. to you?
No. Because he's got a big fish tank? No.
That is a Hollywood-esque move.
His Hollywood ties, though, to his friends and guys who he hangs out with who aren't basketball players, but...
His buddies with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. I mean, when you have reached that amount of success and you've got the money and the means, in the offseason he can go to LA and be out there when he wants to. I just think that when someone takes a chance on you being an athlete and a guy like him who's pretty driven, it means a little bit more to him to be here and to finish things here.
Let's talk this through just for one split second. I love Chicago. All right, I do. I really, really do. I hope to be here for a long time. However,
yes,
the LA Lakers are a signature franchise in the league, if not the biggest franchise in the league, right?
I'm on one right now, though, too.
Yeah, you are, but it ain't the Lakers. The Lakers is another level. LA is king in basketball is king in LA.
Yeah, but they don't care.
The Lakers are terrible, man.
So are the Bulls.
But I don't think that LA fans, of being a guy who has been around certain in areas like Miami, where when we were winning games, we still had – it was hard. We were undefeated. We're trying to pack arenas. Like, are you serious? There's so much stuff going on in L.A. that I feel like sports gets overlooked. It's not like how it was with Showtime.
They love the Lakers, though.
You just did something with your microphone, Hogue.
What'd you say, Hogue?
I said
– yeah, he just went – he can't hear him.
Something just happened to Adam Hogue. He's been – gremlins have gotten Hogue. We'll have to fix that
during
the news.
I want to know what
he was about to say. What I was going to say –
I said they do love the Lakers, though.
They love the Lakers. And by the way, that's Magic Johnson calling you up on the phone. Jimmy, we want you to come to L.A. and be the face of our franchise as we rebuild this thing. You're going to be our veteran leader, and I'm going to bring in some more guys. And you get to live that Southern California lifestyle rather than being coached by Fred Hoiberg at a .500 basketball team. I think that's pretty appealing.
Hold up. Hold. The conversation was not Magic Johnson calling your phone and telling you to come. Yeah, that's the case. I got to think about it.
Well, that's who's running the Lakers right now. I'm just saying he's on Kimmel. Go out to L.A.
This seems like a silly conversation, though. He's got no control over this.
He doesn't. He said it, though. Well, he said it in the interview.
He does and he doesn't. I mean, if he went to PAX and Garn to get me out of here.
Well, I'll tell you, the other side of this is, if you're the Lakers, would you rather have Jimmy Butler or the LaVar Ball?
This is an interesting question.
Clown show.
I would think you'd rather probably have – I would take De'Aaron Fox. I would do that. But Magic's like the type of guy that maybe he thinks he's getting Paul George too, and then he's going to pair those two together. That's a pretty good start.
Are they really going to take Lonzo?
I hope not. I really hope not, but I think they might.
I think they might.
The 4:30 news at 4:31 is sponsored by Zeke Smart Pillow. Coming back after 4:30, I have a very interesting question where either I was a great guy at a wedding or I was the worst person ever. All right. Need some help from the parents on this show. That would be Jared Payton and Adam Hogue.
Wow.
Single man Mark Carmen over here. 720 WGN. I'm at a wedding last night, Hogue.
First of all.
Yeah.
Is that three weddings in 2 weeks?
Three and two.
Gosh.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Expensive. It's amazing that this many people want me to actually come to their wedding.
Was there, that is an upset, was there any blowback from our conversation last week?
Blowback from our conversation last week. Remind me.
About the present that was not delivered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The text that was sent.
No, there was a lot of conversation about that this week on the work front, and I did come correct. I didn't know they had a registry, so I got them a pot Very overpriced pot for his wedding. But I mean, if you're going to throw the pot on there that's like in the price range, I'll get you that pot. I think that's a lame gift, but you know, nobody filled that pot up. I'll get you your pot. You can boil some spaghetti in that pot for the rest of your life and think of me. There you go. Karm got me this pot.
But was there any explanation for the missing gift or the non-gift or why that text was sent? It was, you know, because it really bothered me, actually. So I spent much of my week thinking about this.
Well, if you missed the show last week, I went to a wedding last weekend, and I got a text from the guy who had gotten married saying, hey, did you bring a gift? Just wondering, because we've got one gift here that's cash, but no, but was not signed. It wasn't. He didn't put that all in the same thing. He asked me, had I brought a gift, was the first thing. And I wrote him back, no, dude, I'm sorry, I didn't bring you a gift at the wedding. They have like a table with gifts and all that stuff. I didn't do that. And then he explained why. He was saying, well, we had one gift that was just cash and nobody signed it. So he was trying to figure out who it was. And Adam doubted that gift ever actually occurred with the cash. He was just kind of shaming me for not giving a gift, correct?
Yes, however, you said, you described this as a mystery card. You did not say that there was cash in it.
That was what I learned this week. I learned that.
So that was extra information that I'm still sort of doubting. All right, my fault for bringing that up. What happened yesterday?
So this is what happens yesterday. Okay, the wedding is out in Hobart, Indiana, and we're on a farm.
So Rockford last week, Hobart this week.
Rockford on Friday, Jordan Burnfield, downtown Chicago Saturday, and then Hobart, Indiana last night.
Nice job, JB, with the Chicago wedding.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Jordan. So here we are in Hobart, and the wedding starts at 5:30. I'm there right on time. Not the reception starts at 5:30. There was the church portion was at 1:30. We get there at 5:30, walk on in. Cool barn setting. I'm totally into it. Place is awesome. Great job. The whole thing. You walk out in this little back area, they got the bags game set up. Beautiful, brand new bean bags. The wedding party is on the boards, the whole thing.
Cool.
So I get in a hotly contested bags game where we were winning the whole way, but unfortunately it didn't work out in the end, and we lost 15-14. And I'm trying to, you know, be wedding friendly, but yet I want to get back out there and prove my worth and prove our team's worth in the bags game. So what happens is two, call them like a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, take over the bags and start just firing bags back and forth. And this is at about 6 o'clock. Okay, fine. The kids are playing. I get it. It's not my turn anymore. I lost. Fair enough. It's now 10:30 at night. I'm going deep into the night on the wedding. I'm staying, you know, it's going till midnight.
Wow.
The kids are still playing the bag game. They've been going all night long. Whenever there wasn't dinner being served, they were out there playing bags. And now the mom is involved, and I'm kind of standing and hovering over the game a little bit, trying to, you know, hey, is anybody else going to get to play bags at this wedding other than your two kids and yourself monopolizing the bag game? And so then I went up to my group and I said, I'm thinking about confronting this mom right now and saying like, hey, you know, can we get in on your bag game? You know, and so nobody supported me. But in my mind, it's like, look, you don't get to hog the bag game the whole night. There's 150 people at this wedding. The only people that want, your two kids are not the only people that want to play bags all night long. So where is this? And I get it.
Quick
like
question.
Yeah.
Well, the parents with them, they weren't with them most of the night, right? They only came because you said they were playing till about 10 o'clock.
Early on, the kids were just going at, and there was maybe four kids going on. But at the end, it was the mom, it was the kids, and it was a whole thing, and they just kept going and going and going and going and going.
Well. Now you said this was a 2 and a 6-year-old.
Like maybe a 4 and a 6. Go
okay.
Okay.
Now were they just running the table all night?
No,
no one could beat them.
No,
maybe that was what was going on.
No, there was no. It was they were just flinging bags back and forth. There was no. Yeah. It was
all right. So early on in the night, I'll tell you this as a parent: if those are their kids and they're out there and they're not around them, so they can enjoy like having some drinks, then
right.
You have to understand that.
Right.
But later,
so now the whole wedding is held hostage because you want to enjoy your night because you don't want to spend time with your kids.
Sometimes you got to be selfish, you know? Sometimes. A 4 to 6 year old, I mean, you need a break.
Right, right. I mean, this was like in an apple orchard. If they weren't playing bags, they could have been off with the apples and lost in the darkness of the woods.
Exactly.
So, right. I get it. Like, her kids were occupied, they're having a good time. Don't worry, whatever, this at the Carm guy standing there, screw you, we got the bags thing, you can go hang with your friends and go have another drink, buddy.
Did it seem like the bags were there for adult entertainment, or was there like a kid's area? Like, was this for kids to entertain themselves?
No, that was an adult bag area.
Okay, 100%. Then I think if it was that clear, then my opinion as a parent and a fan of adult beverages and the game of bags is, sorry, kids. If there's adults that want to play, and this is clearly a game that's out here for your adult guests at the wedding, kids, go do something else. Find something else to do.
312-981-7200. Were they abusing the bag privilege as a family at the Carm wedding? 312-981-7200.
Probably four hours. 4 hours seems like abuse.
773, how old are you? It's a wedding, not a bar crawl. You're basically saying I'm pathetic. 616, grow up. It doesn't seem like people are with me on this.
No, you kind of are.
I don't get how you didn't realize that other people want to play bags. I could have gone up there and been like, hey, can I take on your kids? And then knock the kids out and say, okay, you lost. Get out of here, buster. But that would have been kind of aggressive.
You should have done that.
I like that move, though.
I like that move.
Yeah?
Yeah, teach them the hard way. Nothing comes free, kids.
Is Patty Vasquez calling the show? Patty, is this you?
It is me.
Patty, you're a parent.
I'm with you. Here's the thing. Jared, I love you, but going to a wedding and wanting to have a good time is not an excuse to not pay attention to your kids.
Yeah, I agree.
if you don't want to watch your kids at a wedding, take them to a babysitter. Anyway.
Hold up, Bob. We got to figure out, were these kids in the wedding, Carm?
I mean, in the wedding. They were invited to the wedding. They had a wedding
so
where they invited
they
kids.
They were invited, but yeah. These kids weren't in the wedding?
There were a couple kids that walked down the aisle. I'm not sure if it was these kids.
Okay. All right,
so,
go ahead, Patty.
Here's what you do next time. Here's where kids start to go, oh, the adults are starting to bother me. Ask them where their parents are because you want to talk to them.
But their parents
That's
were...
What I do.
Patty, the mom was right there. She was playing. Like, I would have had to have gone up to the mom.
Then you needed me. You got to take me to more weddings, Carm. I don't know what else to tell you. It's harder. I know it's hard with another mom because you don't want to be that jerk.
Well, what would you have done? What would you have done?
I would have asked the mom, hey, do you mind if we take a turn? You know, we've been waiting for a while. I think that your kid's, you know, having a good time. I'd like to have another swing at it. You know, you make it funny. Hey, I lost earlier trying to redeem myself.
Okay. So you would have been friendly about it. I was going to go like full.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely friendly about it.
Okay.
I would have played the kids and beat the kids and then been like, hey, listen, this is sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. You lost this time.
Now go to bed.
Yeah.
I like exactly. That's a good way to go, too.
See, I was sitting there like passive-aggressive land, just stewing.
I know you. You were thinking about this way too hard.
No, Jared's right. Challenge them to a game. That's another way to engage them and then get rid of them. Then scrape them off.
All right.
Thanks, Patty.
Patty, you're the best. Thanks. Love you.
Bye. Love you too. Bye.
Patty enjoying her Sunday with mom tips right there. 312-981. By the way, pretty late, Patty, every night, 11 p.m., 2 a.m. Live your life the right way. Phyllis, what's up? What do you think here, Phyllis?
Hey, I was at a wedding last year, 2 years ago, and they had karaoke. And the kids took over the karaoke.
Oh.
And they sang Frozen 12 times. Until my niece and I said, that's it, we're in, we want to sing a song, get out of here. And we were mean, and everybody was like, thank you, I'm with you. Those kids were obnoxious. And the
what song
obnoxious.
What song did you sing?
We sang Babe, I Got You, Babe.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's first of all, the karaoke at the wedding thing. That's a problem to begin with.
Yeah. I got issues.
Well, kids are the problem.
Well, that's it.
Well, kids, they're lovely, but you know what? At a certain age, they moms need to be watching them or not allowed at the wedding whatsoever.
Phyllis, question. Do you have kids?
I do.
How many?
My son is grown now, but at his wedding, There were no kids allowed, and it was because of the Frozen incident at the previous wedding.
The Frozen incident. I like that.
Yeah. That's awesome. Let it go.
Appreciate you, Phyllis. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye.
312-981-7200.
See, I'm pro kids at the wedding. I like kids. Like my son dancing at my sister's wedding last year was one of the coolest things ever. But, Frozen karaoke, that's almost like a do I need to leave early situation.
I mean, I didn't want to get involved in the should they have had kids or not have kids. It's their wedding. They can do whatever they want. However, at the bag situation, you know. I mean, I thought that was a really cool touch. I playing bags at a wedding's awesome. On a barn, are you kidding me? It's a great look.
Sounded like it.
Right?
Yeah.
But it was not to be.
You know what? None of this probably would have happened if you would have won your first game, man.
Well, we all
That's
got
a great point.
It's kind of true, but we all
you
got
You brought this
up.
On yourself, Carm.
A little bit. 847, get a life, go look for a new couch. How do you know I need a new couch? Did I talk about that on the air? I do need a new couch. I do need a new couch, that's true.
Texters know more about your life than you do.
That couch is really standing the test of time. Thing was bought in like 05 by a store that no longer exists. I am with you, Carm. I would have asked nicely for a turn. P.S. Kids needed to be with a babysitter at home. All right, well.
I got a no kids wedding situation coming up Saturday.
Who's getting married? It's probably not a good radio topic.
A friend of mine.
Friend of friend. Okay. All right.
Actually, this is a good on-air topic. It's actually an ex-girlfriend.
Oh. You were invited to an ex-girlfriend's wedding?
Yeah. Well, our families are still very close friends.
And obviously your wife is coming?
Yes.
That's kind of nice.
We're all friends. It's
all
good.
It's really, really nice.
It's all good. And yeah, it's in Chicago, so I don't have to go to Hobart or Rockford, which is nice.
I mean, Hobart's only an hour away. It wasn't too bad.
So is Rockford.
No, Rockford's like 90 minutes. Rockford's a little more
from the city. For me, it's
okay.
An hour.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, one more on this. Nick, what do you got on the bag game here, pal?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm actually road tripping currently from Chicago to Western Massachusetts to see my daughter, which I do every month. But I just had my cousin's wedding this past October. It was, strictly no kids. And my daughter, I was like, my daughter Riley will be allowed to come. She's family. And my cousin still stood her ground. She's like, no kids. And I said, I totally understand, but I will be, holding her hand the whole time. And I like to party and dance and all that, and so does she. But I think that if you're going to bring your kid and it's okay with the host, that you should absolutely feel that you're going to be taking care of them the whole night. And no one should have to worry about them. Mm-hmm. You're not about to impede on other people's good time because, you want to enjoy your children sharing the night with you.
Good call, Nick. And I think Kevin Piles texted me. I think he's got a great point on this, which would have satisfied every situation here. The issue is that there's only one bag set. I mean, you got a 150-person wedding. You could have had a bag set for the kids, bag set for the adults.
That's what I was going to say, but I didn't want to. Like, come on, just one set of bags. Come on, man. You got a wedding?
Right, we got to go upper
a barn?
Level.
This is a barn. Come on, outside, you should have at least four or five sets. Like
four?
Come on, man.
Two going back-to-back. You're on the winner bag, loser bag, the whole thing. Kid bag, adult bag.
Yeah, I think there's got to be better awareness from the mom here. Listen. Better awareness. People are waiting. Impatient Carm needs to play a game.
Well, I was totally patient. I just was. I mean, she was impacting my time. But it was more so like, I mean, I went up to my whole crew and they were just like, really looked at me like I was a terrible person. Are you kidding? There's a million things for you to do here. Go do something else. I'm like, what do you mean? I want to play the bags. I'm a competitor. It's a wedding. I want to compete. And then I want to get on the dance floor and compete out there and show my incredible talents. Dancing with the Stars. Hogue. JP.
This guy's something else, man.
You don't want to go back to that.
Gosh. That video was still it's just etched into my brain.
Thank you. It's kind of, it was a moment in time that it's come and gone. All right. I think did we solve that? I think I feel a little bit better.
Yeah, we solved it.
Okay. All right. 312-981-7200 with you till 6 on 720 WGN. Some tough people out there in this world. Dateline Canada. Alberta. Tornadoes going on. Dude's out in the backyard mowing his lawn. And he just keeps on going. Ho, you love this story.
I love this guy.
I mean, there's a picture of a tornado, and there's a guy, and he's just mowing his lawn. The tornado's like 3 feet from him.
Well, first of all, this tornado that it hit Alberta on Friday, and it's like one of the coolest tornadoes I've ever seen. I've heard it called the photogenic tornado because it just looks cool. Like the entire sky is swirling, and it just, I don't know, it's cool. But this is from the Canadian Press, okay? This photo was making the rounds on Twitter, and it's really incredible. But this is Three Hills, Alberta. A photo of a man in Alberta mowing a lawn with a tornado swirling behind him has been causing a storm on social media. Pun intended, I'm sure. Cecilia Wessel snapped a picture of her husband, Theunis, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, on Friday evening as the twister passed near their home in Three Hills. She said cutting the grass was on her husband's to-do list. And as he started the task, she went for a nap. Wessel said she was woken by her 9-year-old daughter, who was upset that there was something like a tornado in the sky, but her father wouldn't come inside. Theunis Wessel said the tornado was actually much further away than it appears in the photo and that it was moving away from them. There have been no reports of injuries from the tornado, although some other photos show downed trees and a barn with its roof ripped off. Wessel said he was keeping watch of his surroundings and saw the twister form as the swirling connected from the sky and the ground to form the funnel, but didn't care. See, he said he was fine. He was just mowing his lawn.
See, if I had some Theonis in my, I don't know, somewhere in my body, if I had some Theonis going on, A, I wouldn't have a bursa sack on my elbow. B, I would have been playing bags last night. C, I wouldn't have lost 6-2, 6-0 in tennis yesterday to a pretty good player, but kind of a buster. I need some Theonis going on here. Be able to stand out there in a tornado and just mow the lawn.
Not me. The lawn can wait. Yeah, it can wait, Hoag. I mean, it's not that serious.
I mean, there's a possibility you're not going to have a lawn in 5 minutes.
Yeah, but like, if you're going to get, listen, I'm not saying you should go outside when there's a tornado, but if that tornado is headed your way, whether you're mowing the lawn or you're sitting out in the old house, your chances are not that great.
Yeah, but you have a better chance of being somewhere where there's no windows in a room. Come on,
Theonis knew that he could get inside if he had to.
He does not look that limber.
He doesn't. That's true.
But so
he looks calm, cool, and collected, though. He's got his sunglasses on. I don't know you need sunglasses with a tornado 5 feet away from you, but
it's a beautiful tornado, though.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
You ever been in the tornado? Close to being in the tornado?
Wait, did you just ask if we've been in a tornado?
Well, not actually. You know what I mean.
I have not been in a tornado.
Okay, well,
chances are I would not be talking.
I'll just tell you right now, I haven't been in a tornado, but I've been in a tornado. I'm driving to like some rural high school basketball game. I'm on some single lane highway in DeKalb County or whatever, and there's a tornado in the distance. It's pouring rain. It's terrifying, and I'm thinking like, okay, this is the end. And they tell you, you know what they say? Get in a ditch. Like, I'm going to go outside in the rain and lay down in this ditch and hope for dear life that tornado doesn't sweep me up. I kept driving, and I got underneath, I got myself to a Shell station or Amoco, wherever I was at.
Real quick.
And it worked out, but that was terrifying.
No, I've never been in a tornado either, so I'll tell you that. And Hoag, from this picture, it looks like he's wearing a Bears shirt. I don't know. I mean, it just looks like
it is orange. I don't know if it's a Bears shirt. I kind of thought this was Photoshopped to begin with, but I guess it's been verified that this really did happen. Carm, to answer your question, and maybe some of our listeners would have better recollection than this than I do because I was a kid, but back in the 90s, the Taste of Chicago, there were tornadoes in the area, and the Taste of Chicago got knocked. Like, there was like tents flying everywhere because a wind hit.
Yeah.
And I was in that. We actually got put in a police paddy wagon for safety. Because, you know, one of the police saw that we were young kids and put us in there, my sister and I. And I don't really remember the whole thing. I do sort of vaguely remember sitting in the back of the paddy wagon, though. Maybe I was actually being arrested, and I don't know. Maybe my parents lied to me. But I do remember that happening as a kid, so maybe some of our listeners would have better recollection of that.
See? You were there, Hogue, and you got lucky, I suppose, but you were not. You did not do your Theonis act. You jumped into that paddy wagon.
No, I did not get my lawnmower out and start mowing the lawn when, as soon as I saw a tornado.
We should get Theonis on the show. That guy could inspire us. JP, what's on Sports Feed tonight?
A lot of baseball. We'll talk a lot of baseball tonight. Cubs and White Sox. That's all I got for you right now. 6 o'clock.
All right, after 5 o'clock, we're going to find out if Adam Hogue is smarter than a six-year-old. I'm going to bet that he's not.
He is.
Probably not. No. This
is my kingdom come. This is now back to the beat.
720 WGN.
720 WGN 505. JP off to do TV. Yours truly and Adam Hogue with you till 6 o'clock. Bree Minor is your NCAA champion in tennis. She is a sophomore at Michigan. She's the first African-American woman to ever win the NCAA title. She's going to join us at 5:35. I actually work with her sister, Jasmine, who's a budding media star and who was at Northwestern with Medill. So I think we might be speaking to Jasmine as well. But right now, we're going to find out if Adam Hogue is smarter than a six-year-old. And if you'd like to compete against Adam Hogue, I'd be willing to give Lou Malnati's out to, if you think you're smarter than a six-year-old and smarter than Adam Hogue.
Don't we need a six-year-old then?
We do have a six-year-old. Don't you worry. 312.
Oh, man.
Yeah, 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. If you believe that you're smarter than a six-year-old and smarter than Adam Hogue. Now, the six-year-old that I'm talking about here, Hoagie, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
She's a kindergartner, and earlier this week, she became the youngest person ever to compete in the on-stage spelling round of the Scripps National Spelling Bee. How would you say you are as a speller?
Poor.
Poor speller.
And I blame spell check. You know, I grew up in a time where I became a quick typer. You know, I think we learned how to type very, you know, probably faster than the previous generation before us.
Uh-huh.
But we were also given the nice luxury of spell check.
Yep.
And knowing immediately when we spell something wrong. And now my computer just corrects things for me when I'm typing up your latest Bears news and notes from Hallis Hall. It's all correct. So I could misspell things, you know, 200 of the 1,000 words I write for you, and I wouldn't even know it because it's all fixed for me. So, I blame that.
So what you're saying is that spelling is overrated and you don't really need that skill at all.
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm blaming tech. I sound like an old old guy blaming technology now.
Can you spell naive off the top of your head?
This is one I always struggle with. N.
Uh-huh.
I-E-V-E.
Okay, that's incorrect. That would be an N-A-I-V-E.
I always blow that. Yeah, N-A-I-V-E.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, those simple words. That every time I use that word, I like that word. That's a good word, naive. I use that a lot, and I always spell it wrong, and I have to go, wait a minute, that's wrong, and then my computer just does it for me.
Well, the good news is that you just didn't prove yourself to be dumber than a six-year-old, because that's not the word that we're using today.
Okay, good.
The word that we're using today is nictinasty. Nictinasty. Now, Edith Fuller, who is 6 years old now, but only five when she qualified for the national competition, she is going to try to spell nictinasty. Now, we'd like to give you, Adam, the same benefits that Edith had before she attempted to spell the word. Do you think that's fair?
Yes, I believe that's fair.
Okay, so this is how Edith went about it. You might need strategy too. So Edith first asked, do you know the definition of nictinasty?
I've never heard of the word nictinasty.
Well, neither had Edith, and she was able to get there. So here, Edith will help you out here. Let's get that definition.
Will you please give me the definition?
Nictinasty is movement of a flat plant part as the opening and closing of some flowers that is associated with daily changes of temperature or light intensity.
You got that, Hogue? Something about a plant and parts and light changes and something.
Okay.
Would you like to know the language of origin?
Yes.
All right, the language of origin, please.
Will you please give me the language of origin?
It's made up of Greek elements that were probably first combined in German.
Greek elements first. What do you say? Combined in German. Does that help you at all?
No. How did that help the six-year-old?
Well, I don't know. But would you like to give it a go here and see if you can spell Nick Tenasty? Which I, to me, actually thought that was like a sexual thing, to be honest.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like a word that a six-year-old should be spelling.
Sounds like a 90s, like, boy band start. Nick right? Tenasty.
I'd like you to come over and let's do some Nick Tenasty. That's how, like, I was hearing
one of the Backstreet Boys spun off and started his own single label, Nick Tenasty.
Right.
Okay, I would also like to point out to our listeners that I knew nothing about this segment about 2 minutes ago. This was...
I put it on the red on the web. Is Hoag smarter than a 6 year old? I didn't give any details. So because that
I was blindsided.
Yeah, Nick Tenasty, give it a go.
All right, I'm gonna go here.
Are you cheating?
No, I promise you, I will not cheat. Here.
Oh, thank you very
much. Oh, come on! If I spelled this right, clearly I cheated.
Well, yeah, I know you got an outside shot at it. Outside.
Okay, I really do want to kind of guess at this. Okay, Nick Tenasty.
Yeah.
N. I'm going to guess there's no C. I don't think it's spelled like the name Nick. So I'm just going to go straight to the K.
N-I-K.
Tenasty. I'm going to go T. U. N. A. S. T. I.
Nick Tenasty, according to Adam Hoag, is N-I-K-T-U-N-A-S-T-I. All right, hold on a second here. You have gotten 1, 2, 3, 4 letters wrong.
Really?
4 letters are wrong. Would you like to give it another go before we have Edith give it a try?
Not really.
Four,
I'm not going to come any closer than
one,
whatever
two,
I just did.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 10 letters in Nick Tenasty. Ho got 4 wrong. So we got 60% right. That's a D minus, and you passed. All right.
Okay, I'll take that.
Here we go. Nick Tenasty.
Nick Tenasty. N Y C T I N A S T Y. Nick Tenasty.
Correct.
What?
Can you believe that? She nailed Nick Tenasty.
She started with an N and a Y.
Yep. N-Y-C-T-I-N-A-S-T-Y. You did N-I-K-T-U-N-A-S-T-I.
I thought I did a good job.
You felt it. You felt it. Nick Tenasty. I mean, you could have done like T-E-E and not T-Y. Like, she stuck with the nasty and stayed basic with an N-A-S-T-Y. Then with that Nick thing, she was doing all New York City. And then she did the T with the T-I, Nick Tenasty.
I have to say that I don't really... The spelling bee, I find to be pretty boring. However, it's really impressive what these kids do.
I mean, how did she just get up there and do that?
I mean, they really do, like, they get words that they have never seen before or heard of, and they really do break down. They're so smart that they know the origin of all these words and the different parts of it, and they hear it in a sentence, and they're basically guessing, but they're so smart that they guess right. It's incredible.
They've got great logic. Did you, one other story before we get back to the sporting world, and we're going to give a little Hawk Harrison love coming up here after 5:15. But did you see how Carolina Williams got into Yale earlier this week along the lines of brilliant people?
Okay.
She's a teenager from Brentwood, right? She's applying to Yale, and they asked the teenager, they asked her, what is your favorite? Hold on a second here. Let me get it right. She was asked what her favorite thing to do was, right? And she wrote, order Papa John's pizza. And she says, quote, when the delivery person rings my bell, I instantly morph into one of the Pavlov's dogs, salivating to the sound that signals the arrival of cheesy circular glory. It smells like celebration, as I love to rejoice a happy occasion by calling Papa John's for my favorite food. and the Yale admissions person read this and like loves pizza and wrote her and accepted, you're in. I love pizza too. You're my girl, Carolina. And so she was in at Yale because she just, what gets you most excited? She went Papa John's Pizza, which, by the way, you were talking about earlier in the show being authentic. That was authentic to Carolina. She said Papa John's. She got into Yale. And she's not going to Yale because they don't have the program that she wants. And she's going to like some weird, she's going to Auburn. Which is just bizarre.
You get accepted to Yale for eating pizza and you don't go?
Yeah, she wants.
And you're allowed to respond. The admissions officer can actually write that back. I love pizza too.
The admission officer, I laughed so hard on your pizza essay. I kept thinking that you are the kind of person that I would love to be friends with. A Yale admissions officer wrote her in an email. I mean, but she's going to Auburn. Because it's got the schooling that she wants, not at Yale, which is a big blow to Yale, by the way.
I think Yale has better pizza.
I mean, maybe there's could be more Papa John's, you know, just splattered apart the Auburn, Alabama campus. And so she figured if she got stuck on the west side in her freshman dorm, she would be closer to Papa John's. I don't know. I feel like if you can go to Yale and you can afford to go to Yale, you'd go to Yale over Auburn. But she's going to Auburn, and she's going to have her Papa John's.
All righty.
Adam, like if somebody asked you as coming out of St. Ignatius, Adam mm-hmm. Hogue, what gets you super excited? What would you have said as an 18-year-old?
As an 18-year-old, what gets me super excited?
I would have said Michael Jordan being introduced at Chicago Stadium.
Yeah, I probably would have said something about the White Sox.
when Hawk Harrelson says Joe Creedy. As he hits one into the night, Creedy.
Actually, that would have been right about the right time.
Right?
2003-ish.
Uh-huh.
Joe Creedy was definitely, yeah. I love Joe Creedy.
I tried to get into your era. Hey, let's give a little tribute to Hawk coming back here. And actually, Hawk taught us something with the announcement of his retirement after next year. Coming right back, WGN.
.519 here on 720 WGN. All right, Carm. I just want to point out that during the break, I Googled Nick Tenasty.
Yeah.
Now, full disclosure, I spelled it the way that I spelled it to you, the way I guessed it. And what came up was it changed it one letter, just one letter. Now, I will also point out that it came up in a Wikipedia page that was in a different language, potentially Indonesian. I'm not sure.
Wait, so you're saying the way you spelled it the first time is spelled that way except one letter off?
Except for one letter, which was I had the U wrong. So I spelled it NikTuNasti.
Yeah.
When I typed that in, spelled like that, into Google, it only changed one word, and it had a result that was NikTiNasti.
And what? But that's not the same. That's a different Tenasti.
It's a different. It looks like. Although, didn't you say the definition had something to do with like the leaves on something? Because the image results are showing like plants.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I haven't done a deep dive on Nick Tenasti. I took the video. As gospel here, Hogue, and you know, I wouldn't. That was live on television, so they never lie on television, as far as I know. So whatever you just uncovered seems a little fishy to me, but maybe you are onto something, and perhaps the National Spelling Bee should be called. Do you want me to get him? Do you want Dan Long to get him on the horn here?
I think he should.
Well,
I would just like to. I would like it on the record that I only got one letter wrong, not four.
That's fine. If you want to feel better with that, I'll give you that 100%. You only
when this show is over.
Yeah.
I almost spelled Nick Tenasti right. Uh-huh. And you get 3% credit for Kyle Schwarber's grand slam.
There we go.
We're just solving the world's problems here on the beat.
This is huge moves on the show today. We're very proud. Let's give a moment to Hawk Harrelson. No
mercy.
I'm one more time. Give me one more of those. It's so good. I love Hawk.
Mercy. mercy!
I don't know why he's got to retire. Somebody should send a limo to Indiana and have him drive in.
What are you doing, Wagner?
I mean, you cannot replace that guy. There is only one.
But, you know, this keeps going back to, like, how none of us realized how far away you live.
Well, why does he have to live so far away?
I know. Like, I always knew he was going to Indiana, but I didn't realize it was, like, isn't it 90 minutes away?
I mean, I don't know. Whatever he's talking, I was listening to all the Hawk. Apparently, he's having fights with semi-truck drivers in the middle of the night driving back from U.S. Cellular Field. Now the great guaranteed rate field.
That was a great story.
A couple Hawk cuts for you. Number one, I mean, he knows that he lived the dream and that, this was not work for Hawk Harrelson ever.
I've never had a job in my life. I have never, anytime you go to work every day, and it's not work, anytime you have a profession or a career that you go to every day, it's not work. I have enjoyed, even the 8 years that I've had this commute, going back and forth from South Bend, you know, Granger, there's always something to think about on the way here and on the way back.
He's right.
Yeah.
You can always think about something in the car or call someone. The way you make use of your time. If you're bored, that's on you, right? Even if you're on some long car ride, there's something you can do. Think, listen to music, call someone. Am I inspiring anybody here?
I like my time. I actually, for real though, I like my time in the car alone.
Right, it's peaceful too.
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Right.
And I get a lot done.
That's the other side. You don't need to call anyone. You're an introvert, fine. Listen to, maybe you could learn something. Great. I just like it when guys who are in that position appreciate how fortunate they are to have their gig. Not that it was easy to get their gig. They worked incredibly hard to get it. I mean, Hawk played in the game, so he had a little bit of an edge. And Jason Benetti, who's taking it over, I guess I'm more talking about people like that who worked really, really hard to get there and to hone their talent and all of that. But please know that you're really, really fortunate because there's a ton of talented people out there and there's only a few that get to do it. So when I hear something like that, it makes me feel good inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I really do. I love Hawk. I grew up with Hawk. I mean, my childhood was like going to White Sox games, watching White Sox every single day, and Hawk came back to the White Sox booth in 1990. So I would have been 4 years old. And that's kind of like those are like as far as my, you know, baseball memory stretch. Because I can remember the Twins winning the World Series in 91. So, I mean, it really was watching Hawk every single day. And so, certainly there were days where I was like, come on, Hawk. You know, you start to disagree with something he was saying. Or, you know, I think the reluctance to dive into the analytics in recent years has been a little bit frustrating as I get older and start looking at these things and the way we analyze baseball every week on this show. But as a broadcaster, as somebody who grew up with this guy watching White Sox games, his retirement is sad.
Right?
Great for him, but for me, I feel sad. I'm going to miss him. Benetti's great. I love that the White Sox found a professional play-by-play guy, and that's not a knock at Hawk, but Hawk's different. Hawk's his own guy, and I love that. Hawk will always be that unique talent. But you know, I do think it's great that he's being replaced with a professional play-by-play guy like Jason Benetti, who has good chemistry with Steve Stone, and that broadcast is going to continue to be strong.
Yeah, and we say it, and everybody says it all the time, but it's true. Guys like Hawk, Harry Carey, Harry Callis, Philly, whoever you want to put in there. In New York right now on their broadcast, I mean, Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez have huge, huge credibility. But for the most part, you can't say things that are not incredibly preferential to the team you're broadcasting for. You don't work for the radio station. You don't work for the TV station. You work for the team.
Yeah.
So unless you have huge, huge leverage like Hawk did or different broadcasters, Clyde Frazier in New York has that type of level in the NBA. That dude says he torches the Knicks all the time. And he can because he's Clyde. But guys like that, they just don't exist. Very, very few. And so this is one more going down. Hawk got a little emotional, too, when he started talking about it here, Hoagie. It's kind of like what you were just doing there as far as the enjoyment of what he got to do over time.
I talked it over with my wife, and the White Sox, you know, this has been the greatest ride of my life. And it's been a lot of fun with these fans. And I'll never forget anything that has to do with this. Nothing. I'll remember it forever.
Sounded like it was sinking in right there, right?
Yeah. No, and I would expect that from him. You know, he's going to be around the team still. And I had this idea I put on Twitter yesterday. I want to know what you think. But if he's willing to do it, every once in a while, Stoney takes a weekend off. I'd love to hear him fill in as the analyst.
That'd be great.
Next to Jason.
That'd be great. He's going to miss it. Somehow he's going to pop back in there.
Yeah, right? He's definitely going to.
I would think.
He's versatile. He could fill in both. He could fill in if Jason needs a couple days off. Jason does a lot of other things, too. He's calling games for ESPN and all types of things.
I'll tell you, I've been at my house with my grandkids, but I've been watching, and I can step right in here and tell you that this ball club is incredible. All right, last one. This one shocked me. Hey, Hawk, are the players better today or when you played?
These players are better than we were. Now, our superstars would have been superstars today. They would have been superstars 100 years from now. You know, your Mantle and Mays and those guys, and usually those guys I played against, K-Lines and Killebrews. And with the average player like myself and the average player in the big leagues today, they're so much better than we were. They do things that we didn't even think about doing.
I thought that was pretty shocking and beautiful of Hawk to give that praise to the average player of today.
Yeah, was right.
He is right. As in, who's an average player today that plays five positions and hits bombs and runs and has all sorts of skills?
Who's that player?
Yeah, I'm just like thinking, like, who's an like
Avi Garcia?
Sure. I was going to go, oh, I don't know about Avi. He's either great or the worst player in baseball. But, how about like a Ben Zobrist? I mean, you know, he's a good player, but he's not a superstar. Yet he can play every position on the field and he, you know, switch hits everything. This guy's, I don't know. I think Hawk hit the nail on the head there. All right. He'll be missed. Hoagie, you're going to be all right?
Well, so you know what I do have to, real quick, I like how the White Sox are doing this.
Yeah.
It's like a slow transition. You know, he's doing a little bit less, and then next year he's going to be doing a lot less but still be around, and he's going to get the proper send-off. And then, I think he's probably still going to find a way to wiggle his way into that booth every once in a while, which I think is a good thing.
That's a beautiful thing. All right, coming up after 5:30, we'll talk to NCAA tennis champion Bree Miner, the first African-American to ever win that title. Her sister, Jasmine, will be on with us as well, who also played at Oregon, and she is this media superstar in the making. So that's right after the 5:30 news. .720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Sunday. Don't forget the NBA Finals tonight. Expect you all to be watching. Feel free to talk to me on Twitter @TheCarm. We'll be heavily monitoring my feed tonight as hopefully Golden State goes up two games. Now, of course, Cubs and Cardinals tonight at 6:30. You've got Ian Happ at the top of the lineup. You've got Kyle Hendricks on the mound. Cubs going for the sweep. Hoag, you think they get it tonight? A little sweepy, Cubby?
Yeah, they seem to turn the corner.
Perhaps
a little bit here.
Big homestand here. Let's bring in two sisters, one of whom is an NCAA champion, the first African-American female champion to ever win the title on the NCAA level. She is a sophomore at Michigan, but she's straight out of Mundelein, Illinois. Bree Miner, her sister Jasmine Miner, also online. Jasmine played at Oregon and is a media superstar at Northwestern, is going to be running the world as well. So we basically have Venus and Serena on the line right now in Jasmine and Bree. Welcome, ladies. Congratulations, Bree. That's a phenomenal accomplishment for you. I'm sure it's I mean, I hope you're walking around all, feeling all puffy chested, and I mean, what an amazing job by you.
Oh, thank you so much.
You took out the, who did you beat? Florida's Belinda Wolcock, 6'3", 6'3". And you were unseeded coming into the tournament, Bree. How did you turn from unseeded to an NCAA champion?
Well, you know, being unseeded, there's kind of less pressure on you. You're kind of going in as the underdog. So I just kind of felt relaxed going into the tournament, and I was able to just play my game and have fun. So I think that kind of actually helped me that I was unseeded.
So I don't know enough about the college tennis game to know how many people are seeded. But, I mean, how uncommon is that for an unseeded player to win?
It's pretty uncommon. It doesn't happen too often, but, you know, it has happened before, but, like, not too often.
Now, Jasmine, we used to work together at Fansided, and then you flew the coop because you're on your way to wherever you're going, which is the top of the mountain. But you you played college tennis. How much older are you than your sister? Jasmine?
She's 4 years older than me.
Oh, okay. I thought we had... Okay, my bad.
Did I break up? Yeah, you broke up.
So she's 4 years older, Bree. When did you start beating her?
When did I start beating you? say in high school. When would you say, Jazz?
I would say never.
Oh, okay.
That would be my answer.
Well, I would say around when I was little, when I was in high school.
And you have one other sister as well, right? And would you call yourself like the quintessential tennis family who was on the court at like 3 years old? Is that accurate?
You know, I don't know if we were, I mean, there were other families, I think, that played, but I mean, I think all three of us playing together definitely helped each of us out. You know, it's always nice, I think, for Bree and even for me, kind of having your older sister come first and sort of set the path for you. And I mean, it makes it a lot easier, and it makes it a lot more fun when you know you've got your family right there, who understands exactly what you're going through and what it takes to sort of be successful in the sport.
Carm, this is quite the family we're talking to right now.
Yes, they're way ahead of us here.
One's graduating from Medill, one's an NCAA champion. Your other sister, I believe, is got a law degree from Marquette.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this isn't fair.
Yeah, were your parents on the court with you, or were you sent off to professionals at an early age?
I mean, our parents both played and a little bit in high school, but not really like us. So I think, I don't know. I just think for us when we were young, it just all, Christina went first, our oldest sister, and then I followed her, and then Bree was getting dragged around to tournaments.
So I kind of got into that right away after they started. So, yeah.
So we used to, when Bree was getting pretty much having to go to every tournament that we had. I mean, we kept her busy with some superhero movies and some chocolate just to keep her from getting bored.
Wow.
But it was true, Brie. I mean, but it seemed like it did pretty well in the long run. So,
Brie, you got Serena's autograph, I read, when you were about 6 years old, trying to at least. You were at some tournament?
Yeah, she was playing an exhibition match against Venus in Chicago, and I was able to get her autograph on a big tennis ball.
How cool is that? A little young Bree looking up at Serena. There's Venus getting autographs. What does it mean?
So cool.
What does it mean to you to be the first African American female NCAA champion?
Actually, it means a lot. I mean, I find it like a great accomplishment, and I hope like other African American female tennis players, because there's not a lot in this game. Like, you just don't see a lot of African American female tennis players in tournaments or in college. So, I mean, it's a great accomplishment. I feel honored, and hopefully I can be like a role model one day, just like Serena and Venus were to me. So, yeah.
What do you think the impact is that the Williams sisters have had on the game of tennis. And obviously, I mean, it seems like they had an impact on your whole family.
Yeah, I think after like Serena and Venus, you know, started becoming like, you know, the big shots in professional tennis, I think, at least in my opinion, I think more African-American tennis players started to join in on the game and more started playing. So yeah, I think it was a huge impact after like they got themselves going in the professional tennis world.
So Bree, because you won the NCAA title, you get to play in the U.S. Open, which, by the way, you should know, June the 26th, Hogue, that is a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
That is the tryout day for U.S. Open ball boys. And I do have my flight. I do have my flight booked, Jasmine. I am going. And I want to be on the court like you, Bree, but I can't because I don't have your talent. So I will. My goal is to be, you know, a U.S. Open ball boy. And so hopefully I will be able to provide you the tennis ball that you hit when you play at the Open. How would you feel about that?
I feel so honored that you'd be on the court with me. That'd be so much fun.
We'd be in it together. I'd try to doctor up the ball for
exactly.
Whoever. Right?
Whoa. You're doctoring up the tennis ball. I mean, you're taking this. You're being dead serious about this. You can't be doctoring tennis balls.
That's true. Well, but for Bree, I mean, I feel a connection right now. Hope.
That would be pretty cool if somehow you guys were on the same court.
Right? I mean, you never know how these things spin. Are you... The way it works in tennis, though, right, Bree? You can't get any money for playing in the U.S. Open. Like even just being qualifying, you get $30,000 for playing in the first round, but you can't get that money unless you turn pro. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Because I'm still in college, so I can't accept any money.
What's that, Jasmine? We're having a breakup situation on Jasmine's phone line here, but like, think about that, Hogue. Right?
Yeah.
You're getting $30,000. That's a year's salary for a lot of people.
No, yeah, it is. But yeah.
So you're not thinking about turning pro? You're going to come back for your junior year?
Yeah, of course. I'm staying both for the rest of my college career, and then I'll be looking to play pro after.
Okay. Well, Bree, you went to Carmel. What was it that landed you in Michigan? What kind of other opportunities or offers did you have, and what led you to go blue?
Well, so Michigan was my first visit, but I also visited Northwestern and UCLA. And I don't know what – I loved Northwestern and UCLA too, but I don't know. I kind of fell in love right when I got to Michigan. You know, the team and the coaches were the main thing I was looking for, and I was just looking for, like, a family atmosphere. And I thought they really provided that. Like, you just saw, like, both of the coaches, like, had good relationships with every girl. And, you know, the team got along so well. And, like, going to eat with them, like, watching them practice, you could just tell that they were, like, really a family. So that's really what got me with Michigan. And then there's, like, other stuff that added on with, like, academics and big sports school and all of that. So, yeah, Michigan, I fell in love right away.
Bree, we need a U.S. tennis superstar. Somebody's got to fill the vacuum when Serena and Venus retire, which is coming here at some point, even though, I don't know, Venus is still doing it, and Serena wants to play after she has her baby. Are you looking at yourself like that? Are you dreaming it that big?
Yeah, I am. I definitely want to try and be one of the best one day, so we'll see what happens.
Wow. All right. Well, we wish you luck, Bree, and Jasmine. And listen, I expect to see you at the Open. I want to be on that court with you. I'm going to throw the ball accurately from one end to the other. I'm going to sprint on any opportunities if I'm at the net to quickly get the ball off the court. And I won't
count on it, Bree. Don't count on it.
Well, it's an awesome story for real, though, Bree, and congratulations, and your family has been so involved in the sport. Jasmine, I'm sure it's super cool for you to see your sister having this level of success. You've been massively celebrating it on social media, so I think it's just awesome.
Yeah. It's been amazing. I'm really, really proud of her.
Good job, Bree.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Good luck at the U.S. Open. You're my hero.
Thank you. I will see you there on the court.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bree and Jasmine Miner headed to the U.S. Open. We got breaking news here, Hogue.
Huge news regarding tonight's game, too. And it's interesting how it could affect this series. It's certainly the way it could be looked at if things change.
We'll tell you about it coming right on back here, 720 WGN. Well, he hasn't coached since Game 2 of the first round of the playoffs, but he will be coaching tonight. Steve Kerr, who has been battling all sorts of health issues, is back and will coach the Golden State Warriors tonight. Wrapping up the show here, I'm Mark Carmen. He's Adam Hogue with you till 6. Brian Noonan coming up. This is great for Steve Kerr, right, Hoagie? I mean, you got to be happy for this guy.
I love it. You know, we talked to our Warriors guest last week from the San Francisco Chronicle, who, I mean, really made it seem like Steve Kerr might never coach again. And maybe he won't after this series. Maybe this is it. But, you know, this has been such a tough battle with him, with his back, and, you know, to not even be able to coach over it, it's good to see him back on the sidelines tonight. Now, what's interesting is, I guess, the dynamic. I mean, how much do you put Mike Brown has been doing a pretty good job, but how much you just put this on the players just being so darn good? I mean, does it really matter who's coaching the team?
I don't think it does. And Kerr's been in the locker room, so whatever he's been doing at halftime has perhaps helped the Warriors. I don't really know if they need much help since they're 13-0 and are killing everyone. I do feel like a little bit bad, minor bad for, and I, you know, and bad as far as like people who are living the greatest lives ever, for Mike Brown. I mean, he's been coaching the whole way here, and so you got to step aside for your guy, which I'm sure he's more than willing to do considering he gets to be an assistant coach on the best team in basketball. But that kind of just, I don't know, it just seems like, hey, man, you know?
I mean, a good chance, if Kerr doesn't remain the coach going forward, that Mike Brown gets the job, I would think.
Right.
By the way, this is pretty funny. Steve Kerr talked to NBA TV's David Aldridge about coaching tonight.
Right.
He said, quote, "Mike just wasn't getting the job done. The numbers are deceiving. Don't pay attention to the record. The team was falling apart."
See, that's why he's as beloved as he is. Because, you know, he's just always gets it that, like, yeah, I'm kind of coaching tonight just for me, and they don't need me at all. But, by the way, I'm the coach, and I want to be the coach because this is fun, and we're in the NBA Finals. Steve Kerr, when he played here, you could go out. He was, like, go-to guy in the locker room. Not that anyone cares about that other than the media, but he was always there to talk and always interesting, right? And he's maybe, like, top five most likable guy out there in all sports, Steve Kerr. Right? Really? Right?
Yeah, no, he is. You know, the only situation I can think of that's similar to this maybe be Jerry Kill at Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
Now, his issues were a lot different. I mean, just having seizures at any given moment, including on the sidelines. But still to the point where it was clearly impacting the job, and a very likable guy, right? I mean, Jerry was someone you wanted to root for. You wanted him to succeed. You wanted him to be coaching. You wanted him to be healthy. And who are we to tell somebody how they feel? You know, like that's the other thing that's tricky about it. You want to just say, hey, Steve, you know, why don't you just let Mike Brown finish this thing off? Well, it's his job. You know, he's the head coach, and if he feels like he can coach, then he should. I mean, at least that's my take on it.
Well, and what you touched on too earlier, like this might be his last go around here because, I mean, who knows? I'm not a doctor. I have no idea what's going on, but it just seems to me like he might not want to put his body and his family through, you know, more NBA seasons when he can maybe just be in the background. But he's been leaking spinal fluid, which I've never had that, but it sounds just brutal. And so he's been nauseous and unable to stand up. I mean, it's been basically for months now on end, has been, you know, lying down hoping that this is eventually going to go away. So
here's more of what he told David Aldridge. Yeah. "I just feel better. The last couple of weeks have been better. I've been leading practice every day, doing the coaches' sessions and film meetings, and put together a few good days. The intention is to coach tonight and the rest of the series. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't think I could do it. I'm feeling better, more back to where I was during the regular season. I coached every game in the regular season. Didn't always feel great, but I was able to do it. I'm better than where I was a couple weeks ago, and I've put together a couple of good days. So let's go.
Go, Steve Kerr. Get it done, man. 2 hours of NBA hoop. Little high-intensity game, too. I'm excited to watch it tonight. If you're just joining the show, both Adam and I are... I got the Warriors in 4.5. Where are you at?
4.5.
I think maybe that's like a 50-50 shot that Cleveland wins a game. Of course, I've been wrong before, but this one seems pretty insurmountable with the way Golden State looks right now.
Yeah, it does. Game 5 is back in Golden State, too, with the way they do the finals now. Otherwise, I might say that Cleveland would win 2 in Cleveland. I think it goes 5. I think the Warriors win this thing in 5. I think tonight's closer, though.
I agree.
I think tonight's going to be a closer game. And, boy, you hope the Warriors don't somehow lose this thing. Then this coaching thing gets a little...
That would
dicey.
Be ugly. Cleveland's got to make the game ugly. It has to be a super...
I don't know how you do that, though, against this team. It's unbelievable how they just keep running up and down the court.
Well, I would walk the ball up. I would have...
But then you can't turn it over, because every time they turn it over, it's whoosh, other way, right, layup, right. Or three-pointer.
You can't turn it over. You've got to get back. And when people drive the lane, it's going to be physical. Tristan Thompson's got to take some hard fouls. You just got to make it super uncomfortable. It's going to have to look super ugly if they're going to even be in the game. There's no way Cleveland can play up and down with them. No chance.
No chance.
And it's the thing with Golden State, like, shot goes up, Durant's got the rebound. He's pushing it. Shot goes up, Draymond's got the rebound. He starts the break. I mean, there's not even an outlet pass.
I know.
You know, it goes to Clay. He can bring it up. All five guys, with the exception of when they have Pachulia or McGee on the court, there's not even an outlet. They just they grab the ball and they just go.
Yeah.
And then you got shooters everywhere and guys that can go to the rim. And Steph Curry's out of his mind right now. Throw that in there, too.
He's so fun to watch. He just is.
He is. And don't forget Cubbies Cardinals tonight, too. White Sox lost on a 3-run homer off David Robertson as their losing streak is now at 5. Brian Noonan's coming up. We got one little quick final break here, 720 WGN.